Now calling the second general session of the fall 2010 convention of the California Council of the Blind to order.
Yay! All right.
Right. And I'm going to present to you our presiding officer for the evening, First Vice President and Convention Chair, Mr. Eugene Lozano Jr.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I hope you had a good dinner, and I hope you all, those of you who were at the President's dinner and were in the downstairs restaurant, I hope that you found that the service was more timely. They had more staff on board tonight, and I found it to be very, very timely. And so, anyway, let's get on. We will go to the remembrance of members of CCB who have passed since 2010 Spring Convention. Are there any, does anyone want to bring to our attention? Anyone's passing?
Got one. Okay.
Good evening. This is Steve Fort, delegate from Bavia Chapter. We had a longtime member who passed away very young, and that is Mark Oswald. Couldn't receive a liver transplant because of a heart condition, and he died peacefully in his sleep a week ago last Monday. And he was so enthusiastic, and he wanted to come to this convention so much. He loved coming to the conventions. And so I want to remember Mark Oswald. Thank you.
Hi, this is Liz Klein from the San Francisco chapter. We had one of our members just pass away. Most of you probably didn't know her, but you knew her husband, Percy Jones. Candace passed away about 3 months ago.
Beryl Brown from the Redwood Empire. We lost a very lovely, beloved member this year, Lillian Gaines. She was 97 years old. She celebrated each birthday in her 90s by doing something daring that she'd never done before. She took motorcycle rides. She went kayaking. She wanted to go bungee jumping, but her doctor wouldn't let her. She single-handedly was responsible for getting audible signals in several intersections in Ronet Park.
Wonderful. That's great. Artist Glendale Burbank Chapter. One of our longtime members, Frances Menino, passed away this year. And she, of course, many of you knew her. Her husband had donated lots of money to CCB, so we all missed her.
That's it, Ed?
I don't see any other hands.
Okay. Then I would like, if we could just have a moment of silence to remember these members. If we could have silence, please. Okay, thank you very much. I would like at this time to ask if our Credentials Committee Chair, Rob Turner, could do the credentials report for us, please.
Okay, I'll do it. Start off with the ACB Capital Chapter. President, Deborah Thompson. 10 votes, 51 members. Delegate, Joni Patchy. Alternate, Deborah Thompson. Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter. President, Christy Crespin. 5 votes, 18 members. Delegate, Alan Ramos. Alternate, Nellie Emerson. Alameda County Chapter, President Peter Crockwell. 5 votes, 15 members. The delegate is Daryl Wilkerson. Alternate, Peter Crockwell. The Association for Multicultural Concerns, President Lillian Scafie. The number of votes, 5. It's a special interest affiliate. 63 members. Delegate, Bejoy Rimhild. Alternate, none. Bay Chapter, President Sherry Gilson. 11 votes, 56 members. Steve Fort, delegate, no alternate. Blind Students of California, President Lena Bandy. It's a special interest affiliate, 5 votes. They have 18 members. Delegate, Lena Bandy. Alternate, Lisa Gordon. Braille Revival League of California, President Marlene O'Neill. Steve, well, but this is previous to the election, so. All right, so let's continue. Five votes, 42 members, and the delegate is Marlene O'Neill, and Katrina McCurdy is the alternate. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCLV. President Bernice Kandarian, 5 votes, 81 members. Don Sanchez, delegate. Alternate, Bernice Kandarian. California Library Users America. President Jerry Arakawa. It's a special interest affiliate. 5 votes, 27 members. Delegate Jerry Arakawa, no alternate. Central Coast Low Vision Council Chapter, CCLVC, President Matthew Simons. 5 votes, 16 members. Delegate Thomas Athanasian, alternate delegate Marcy Knudsen. The new chapter, Coachella Valley chapter. So that's great. Linda Samolsky, president. 5 votes, 11 members. And the delegate is Linda Samolsky, alternate Mike Armbruster. Compton chapter, president Michael Williams. 10 votes, 52 members. Hit Michael Williams, alternate Jeffrey Sims. East Los Angeles chapter, President Navarati. 8 votes, 39 members. Charles Navarati, the delegate, and Marie Herrera, alternate. Glendale Burbank chapter, President Artis Bazin. 8 votes, 38 members. Delegate Keith Johnson, alternate Artis Bazin. Okay. Golden Gate chapter. President Dr. Martin Jones. 6 votes, 29 members. Delegate, Marvelena Gray, no alternate. Greater Bakersfield Council Chapter of the Blind, Penny Valdovinos, President. 5 votes, 20 members. The delegate is John Ross, no alternate. Greater Long Beach Chapter, President Mike Conrad. 5 votes, 22 members. The delegate is Lillian Scafie. There is no alternate. This was the greater, now we get to greater Los Angeles chapter. I hope I said Long Beach. Okay. All right. President Pamela Metz, 5 votes, 22 members. Delegate Ken Metz, alternate Pam Metz. Greater San Joaquin Valley, we've got Tom Randall, president. 5 votes, 23 members. Delegate is Debbie Flowers. The alternate is Mary Beth Randall. Guide Dog Users of California, president, Mary Beth Randall. It's a special interest affiliate. They've got 5 votes with 35 members. Delegate is Ann Kaiser. The alternate is Pat LaFrance Wolf. High Desert Chapter, President Brad Hogarty. 6 votes, 32 members. Leah Gesendener is the delegate. The alternate is Ezekiel Brooks. Inland Empire Chapter, the President Ray Urias. 5 votes, 24 members. Delegate, Bessie Dunn. Alternate, Ray Urias. Orange County Chapter, President, Catherine Schmidt Whitaker. 5 votes, 21 members. Delegate, Debbie Kessler. Alternate, Catherine Schmidt Whitaker. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association, President Albert Contreras. It's a special interest affiliate, 5 votes, 24 members. Delegate Albert Contreras, no alternate. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, President David Hanlon. 5 votes, 100 members. Delegate Roy Harmon. Alternate is David Hanlon. Redwood Empire Council Chapter, President Larry Hall. 10 votes, 48 members. Delegate Larry Hall, alternate Eric Smiley. San Bernardino Chapter, President Theodore Wilbricht. 9 votes, 47 members. Delegate Theodore Wilbricht, Gene Brannon, alt. Eagle Book Club, President Jacqueline Jackson. 6 votes, 32 members. The delegate is Jacqueline Jackson. The alternate is Joseph Lopez. San Diego Chapter, President Glenda Castle. 6 votes, 31 members. Delegate Doug Martin. Alternate is Pat Evis. San Francisco Chapter, President Linda Perel. 7 votes, 35 members. Delegate Linda Perel. Alternate David Jackson. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, President Donna Pomerantz. 9 votes, 47 members. Phil Obregon is the delegate. The alternate is Pam Pology. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, President Mike Keithley. 15 votes, 76 members. Delegate Lorraine Brown. Alternate Alice McGrath. Okay, now we should Yosemite Gateway Chapter. President Margaret Buckman Garcia. 7 votes, 35 members, growing chapter. Margaret Buckman, delegate is Margaret Buckman Garcia, and the alternate is Viviana Norris. Okay, now we get to, unfortunately, chapters that weren't seated or couldn't attend, and that's going to be the Antelope Valley. The Antelope Valley County Chapter, and we've got the Antelope Valley Chapter. There's no county in that one. We've got Butte County Council of the Blind, El Dorado County Chapter, humble Council of the Blind, Pyramid Chapter, Solano Adult Blind Club, and San Mateo are the chapters that aren't seated. So, but we do have a new chapter. That's I guess that's one way to look at it. So that's my report. I want to thank my committee members, Steve Fort and Mike Keithley, for his technical expertise, and the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind for their use of their embosser. And Jeff, it's been a pleasure to serve, and I'll be seeking other challenges in the upcoming administration. Thanks.
Thank you. I will entertain a motion to approve the Credentials Committee's report.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay, the ayes got it. Thank you, Rob.
My pleasure.
Dr. Feeney in the...
Yes, right here.
Good. Okay. Our first speaker this evening is going to be talking about a subject of great interest to me, and I think to many of you, regarding this sleep disorder that seems to be connected to blindness. And so we're very fortunate that this evening that we have with us Dr. John Feeney, who is a graduate from Georgetown Medical School and is board certified in neurology. He is the chief medical officer for Vanda Pharmaceuticals, Inc. in Rockville, Maryland. He joined Vanda in 2008 after 16 years working for the Food and Drug Administration. While he was there, he held several positions, but his most recent one was as the acting director, and I lost my place, director of the Division of Neurological Products. And prior to him joining the FDA, he was in general neurological practice, both in the area of military and civilian settings. This evening, he's coming to talk to us about the circadian rhythm sleeping disorders experienced by people with total blindness. Please give him a hand and listen to him very intently, please.
Thank you, Gene. I really want to express my thanks to Gene for inviting me to be here tonight. And I want to thank all of you in the audience for giving me an opportunity to talk to you about something that I've become very interested in over the last 3 years since I joined Vanda Pharmaceuticals. In joining the company, I've really begun to learn about this whole fascinating area of circadian rhythms and how they affect our lives, and in particular, how they affect our sleep-wake cycle. So I hope to share some of what I've learned in the past 3 years with you here tonight, and hopefully it'll help some of you either help yourselves with your own sleep-wake problems, or maybe give some advice to other people, friends and relatives that you think might be affected. Now, as it turns out, I'll be talking about circadian rhythm sleep disorders as they affect people who are totally blind, but in particular, I'll be focusing on a unique sleep-wake disorder that's, it's got a kind of strange name. It's called on-24-hour sleep disorder. And as we learn about that particular disorder, what we learn about is really a very unique connection between vision and sleep, one that I have to say a lot of people really don't recognize. So I hope to share what I've learned with you tonight. Tonight is, this time of year is the perfect time to talk about this topic. And the reason is because a week from tomorrow night, all of us, we're going to switch our clocks forward, or I'm sorry, we're going to fall backward. I always have to remind myself of the mnemonic, spring forward and fall backward. So a week from tonight, all of us here are going to turn our clocks back an hour and actually gain an hour of sleep. So that sounds like a great thing. And of course, the converse, when daylight savings time begins in the spring and we spring forward, we actually lose an hour of sleep. So that's a bad thing. Nobody likes that. So at some level, that seems like such a simple paradigm. You lose an hour, that's bad. You gain an hour a week from now, that seems good. But unfortunately, it's not as simple as that, and it speaks to the regulation of our sleep-wake cycle. In fact, I'll talk about a study that was done a couple of years ago by some scientists in Finland. And what they did is they took nine people, and they actually studied these nine people both in the spring at the time of daylight savings time beginning, and then in the fall when it ended. And what they did is they actually studied their sleep in detail for a week before the change and a week after the change. And what they found is really there wasn't much difference between the spring and the fall. In both cases, the quality of the sleep in these 9 or 10 individuals actually deteriorated immensely after the change. It's not as simple as gaining an hour, losing an hour. In fact, the sleep was totally screwed up for all these patients after the change. And I think the reason for that is because as soon as you change the clock, you create an asynchrony, a mismatch between your internal body clock and the clock on the wall, your environment. And once you have that mismatch, it creates all kinds of havoc with your sleep. So daylight savings time and the changing of the clocks around the beginning and end of daylight savings time is really can really be like a model for a family of disorders called circadian sleep disorders, examples of which are things like jet lag, when you suddenly, you know, travel to a place that's 5 hours different from where you started, or shift work sleep disorder, where suddenly you're working at night when you're used to sleep at night, or in the case of what I'm talking about tonight, non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. So let me start off. Usually when I give this talk, I ask at the very beginning, how many people in the audience, before they heard about this talk, how many people had actually heard of non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder? If people can raise their hands. So as usual, there's kind of a smattering of people in the audience that have raised their hands. I'd say maybe one-fourth of the people. Now, the next question I ask is, for those of you who have heard it, how many of you do you think that the medical community, or perhaps your own physicians, or physicians that you, the sleep specialists, how many of them do you think recognize non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder and are familiar with it? And that's the answer I always get. which is really fairly astounding given what has been learned about these disorders over the last few decades. But that's always the answer I get. And it is especially surprising because although non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder may be a rare disorder across the entire population, it's really thought to be quite common. It's thought that maybe the majority of people who are totally blind, who have no light perception, are at risk for developing it. So it seems like it should be recognized, but it's not. And I think in this day and age, it's probably true that most people who suffer with non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder are either misdiagnosed with something else or not diagnosed with anything. And what other diagnoses do they get? Usually it's things like anxiety or psychiatric things, depression, or perhaps just chronic insomnia. Proper diagnosis is really lacking in this day and age. And so we have to ask ourselves, why is that, given our state of knowledge nowadays? The first reason is that it is a rare disorder across the board. In the United States, it's estimated that maybe 60 to 90,000 people are affected with non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. But again, although it's rare overall, in people who are totally blind, it's probably the majority of those people who are at great risk for having the symptoms of non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. What are some of the other reasons why it might not be generally recognized by the medical community? One is that there is no approved drug product to treat the disorder right now. So there really isn't a quick and easy fix. And as we all know, physicians, by nature of their training, like to learn about things that they can fix. And without an approved drug product, it's very true that a lot of physicians just kind of don't pay attention when they hear about things. An example is sleep apnea. I think now that there is an intervention for sleep apnea in the form of continuous positive airway pressure, sleep apnea is diagnosed very commonly now. Once there's some sort of intervention, healthcare providers kind of run to diagnose the disorder, and that's just the way it is. The third thing is that circadian rhythms in general are not talked about a lot. I can tell you that when I went to medical school, I don't think there was any mention of circadian rhythms and circadian rhythm sleep disorders. It is true that a lot more has been learned over the last couple of decades, and I think I'll turn to those new findings and just kind of talk about them in turn with you. The first thing that's been learned over the last couple of decades is that, in fact, we all do have an internal body clock. It's a body clock that controls our internal rhythms of things like body temperature, hormone secretion, and of course our sleep-wake cycle. And probably the thing that we're most aware of is our sleep-wake cycle. What the body clock does is, for sleep, it does two things. Number one, it creates a circadian rhythm, and by that I mean a circadian rhythm is something that changes about every 24 hours, something that comes pretty much on a daily basis or that goes through a cycle in 24 hours. So our body clock tells us when to fall asleep at night. It does something else. The internal body clock gives us a consolidated sleep period. So because we have the internal body clock, we sleep typically, ideally, in 8-hour increments, 7 to 8-hour consolidated sleep periods. That is the goal for all of us. If the body clock were not there, what would happen if the body clock were destroyed in any of us, we would start having, fall into a pattern almost like cat naps, where we would sleep for 5 minutes every hour, or maybe 10 minutes every hour. And it would just kind of go on and on like that. As we accrued fatigue in the course of the day, we'd take a little nap, then we'd wake up. And so the body clock tells us to consolidate our sleep. What's been learned is that the body clock actually exists in a very finite part of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It's a little tiny part of the brain about the size of a grain of rice. It's made up of about 10,000 cells, and it sends out signals that control rhythms of our hormone secretion, temperature, and then in turn controls our sleep. So it's really quite an amazing thing to imagine just one very localized area of our brain that's doing all these functions, but that is true. The next thing that's been very well characterized over the last decades is that our body clock actually has a timing that is not what you would expect. I think the natural inclination would be to expect that our body clock is timed like the clock on the wall with 24-hour rhythm. In fact, the average timing of the internal body clock is about 24 hours and a half. Why that is, I don't think anybody can tell us now, but it's certainly surprising. And then the other thing that's surprising is we all have a different body clock. So my body clock might be 24 hours and 5 minutes. Somebody else might have a body clock of 25 hours, or somebody might have something in the middle. So there's great variability with a range of about 23 hours and 45 minutes, all the way up to about 25 hours. The other thing to keep in mind is you can measure the internal body clock. The way you can measure it is the way we measure it in our clinical trial that's ongoing right now. And that is, in our trial, we take a urine specimen about once a week. Over the course of 4 weeks, we collect 4 urine specimens. In the urine, we can actually measure different hormones. You could measure cortisol, or you could measure melatonin, another hormone secreted by the brain. And depending on the cycle that you see on each of these measurements over 4 weeks, you can actually figure out the timing of the internal body clock. So it's really kind of an amazing thing that you can determine your inner workings that way. Obviously, we in our lives don't do well if we're not in sync with the environment. So for things to function smoothly, there has to be some way to synchronize this internal body clock with the 24-hour light-dark cycle that's going on around us, with the world around us. As it turns out, light perception is the best synchronizer for those two rhythms. And I'll tell you kind of an interesting anecdote. One of the ways this was first recognized goes back to about 1960. There was a French geologist in the south of France, and he also developed an interest in circadian rhythms. And he started wondering, in the environment deep in the caves of the Alps, he wondered what sort of kind of wake cycle would develop. And so he went into a cave for 2 months. And living in that cave, he actually measured his circadian rhythm, his sleep-wake cycle. And what he found is that after a couple of weeks, his natural rhythm had evolved, and he was kind of living on a 25-hour day in the dark of the cave. So it became very clear it was the perception of light out in the above ground that was synchronizing his internal body clock to the environmental clock. Now, subsequently, a lot has been learned just in the last 5 to 6 years about how this takes place. Some scientists at Harvard University about 5 years ago recognized that there are specialized cells in the retina called ganglion cells. And these ganglion cells have a certain kind of receptor that certain wavelengths of light will trigger the chemical. And then these cells, different from the rods and cones, will send signals not to the occipital lobe, not to the areas of the brain that help us perceive the world around us, but these ganglion cells send signals to the suprachiasmatic nucleus, to the internal body clock. And their only role is to synchronize or entrain that body clock on a daily basis. So in a sighted person, light perception just kind of resets the body clock once a day to put it in sync with the environment, and then all of the other rhythms, hormonal secretion, body temperature, sleep-wake cycle, all kind of line up. Absent light perception, that doesn't happen. And let me tell you what happens if the clock takes over and is clicking away at, let's say, 25 hours. Let's say your internal body clock was 25 hours and you had no light perception. Each day, if you had a consolidated sleep period, each day the time that you would fall asleep would shift forward an extra hour. So if you went to bed at 10 o'clock in one night, then the next night you would be tired and want to go to sleep at 11 o'clock. And then the next night it would be midnight. And the next night it would be 1 a.m. and so on and so forth. Until about 12 days later, you would actually have a signal telling you to go to sleep in the middle of the day at about noon. And then slowly, 12 days later, it would kind of cycle back and tell you again to go to sleep at 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night. And there would be this constantly changing pattern that maybe, I'm guessing, some people in the audience have recognized in themselves over time. Very unique kind of cyclic sleep-wake disorder characterized by insomnia at night. And then as a result, fatigue during the day, even to the point of having the need to have irresistible naps during the day. So that's the result of this asynchrony created by lack of light perception. Well, what's to be done? What's the next best thing to synchronize these rhythms outside of light perception? We know through the work of some very good scientists over the last decade that there's a chemical signal in the suprachiasmatic nucleus, and it's the melatonin or melatonergic chemical system in the brain that is probably the next best thing to synchronize these rhythms outside of light perception. And I have to mention some of these scientists because they really are responsible for most of what we know about circadian rhythms and the regulation of circadian rhythms. In California here, Stanford University has been one of the pioneering sites looking at sleep disorders and in particular non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. In Oregon, there's a Dr. Al Louie who's spent most of his career studying these circadian rhythms. And then at Harvard, there's two people, Dr. Charles Zeisler and Stephen Lockley, who have devoted a fair amount of their career to studying these things. And I'm going to take just a couple of minutes to talk about three particular clinical studies that were done. A couple of them were done around 2000, so about 10 years ago, and then one of them was done about 7 years ago. And these were clinical trials that were actually done with the compound melatonin. The first of them was done by Dr. Stephen Lockley, now at Harvard. And what he did, he had seven patients who had no light perception and were suffering with non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. And he gave them a dose of about 5 milligrams of melatonin on a nightly basis over the course of about 3 months. And what he did was he measured their internal body clock. He was actually measuring cortisol in the urine in the patients. And what he found is that these seven patients, before taking melatonin, their internal body clocks ranged from 25 hours to 24 and a half hours. But after they had been on melatonin for a period of time, about half of them, their body clock suddenly synchronized with the environment and had come down, and they were clicking away at about 24 hours. So he showed that it was possible to synchronize the internal rhythms doing that. He didn't do any other measurements specifically of sleep or napping during the day. So Dr. Al Lewis in Oregon followed that study up a year later. And what he did was he took a dose of 10 milligrams. Again, he had a small handful of patients, about eight patients. And he started them on the higher dose, 10 milligrams, treated them for a couple of months. And then what he did, he figured out when they should have been maximally at phase. And he measured their body clocks again. And what he found was pretty much all of them, their body clocks, as measured by hormone secretion, had synchronized to a 24-hour rhythm. And he did something else. At that same point, he did what are called polysomnograms, measurements measuring the brain waves through little electrodes pasted on the scalp. And he was able to measure their sleep. And he showed that not only were their chemical rhythms entrained, but they were actually sleeping maybe an hour better on average at night. So that was really the first good evidence that using melatonin could improve sleep on a regular basis. Dr. Lockley came back a couple of years later and did a similar study. He actually used a much lower dose this time. He used a dose of 0.5 milligrams of melatonin to stimulate these melatonergic synapses in the brain. And he did all three. He measured the body clock by hormone secretion. He measured nighttime sleep. He also did an interesting thing. He measured nap time during the day. He had people just keep diaries of how much time they slept during the day. And over the course of a month or so, he averaged all their nap time. And at the end of his study, he showed that on average, people that took the melatonin averaged about 45 minutes more sleep per night. And during the day, they actually had maybe a half hour to 40 minutes less nap time. So across all three studies, what you see is that by stimulating the melatonergic system in the brain, it's possible to entrain the body clock to an environmental 24-hour clock, just as light perception does in the sighted. So the next obvious question is, well, melatonin, should everybody who is at risk for this disorder take melatonin? Obviously, there's a lot of questions still unanswered by these studies. I mentioned three different doses that were used, and these were very short-term studies in small numbers of patients. So there's still a lot of questions about the right way to use melatonin, whether it's continues to work when it's taken over a longer period of time than a month or two. And I guess there's just still a lot of questions. Melatonin is available in this country as a dietary supplement, but because it's not a regulated drug product, there really are no clear directions for use on the bottles. And so I think there's been a general amount of dissatisfaction with that as a treatment. So one thing that is clear from the studies is that it is possible that it will help some people. It's also been shown at the end of some of these studies The melatonin was taken away, and people immediately reverted back to their internal body clock. So it does seem like if you are going to start using melatonin or something like melatonin, it will need to be taken chronically in order to maintain its effect. So with that, let me tell you a little bit about what my company is doing now. We have a drug product called Tasimelteon that is similar in some ways to melatonin. It's also a drug that stimulates the melatonergic neurons in the brain. And we've shown in some preliminary studies that it has the ability to change body clock by small increments in short-term trials. What we're trying to do is develop it and lead to an application to the Food and Drug Administration to have an approved drug product to treat non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. And to that effect, we've actually started a clinical trial. And let me take a few minutes to tell you about that trial. It actually started enrolling subjects in August. And for that trial, we're hoping to enroll about 160 patients who are totally blind and who have sleep or wake problems. And in that study, what we'll do is for people that come to the trial, we'll actually measure their body clock during the screening period. And if we find that it's not in sync with the environment, then we'll assume that they have non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. And then our hope is to put about half of the patients on Tasimelteon for 6 months, and then the other half would take a placebo or sugar pill for 6 months. And we hope to compare this nighttime sleep and the daytime sleep as reflected by nap time, and also measure the body clock through hormone secretion, and also just take measures of safety, general adverse events or whatnot throughout the trial to characterize the safety profile of the drug. And our hope is that with this study plus additional studies that we do over the next couple of years, we will be in a position to demonstrate the efficacy and safety of Tasimelteon, and maybe along the way learn more about non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder. I would assume that there may be some people in the audience that might consider themselves at risk for the trial. So I'll mention generally the inclusion-exclusion criteria for the study. Right now, we're studying adults only, so anyone between the ages of 18 and 65 years of age is eligible, who's generally in good health, not taking a lot of medications that would interfere with the measurement of the body clock. And although we're not studying children right now, at some point we probably will want to characterize the efficacy and safety in children, because it certainly is clear that children who have no perception are as at risk for this problem as anybody else. And of course, children who are not sleeping well at night, that's a problem. It's a problem on many fronts, both for the parents, but also for the learning and development of kids. So hopefully over time, studies be done to find some effective intervention for kids too. So at this juncture, again, our goal right now in the immediate future is twofold. Number one, it's just to increase awareness about this disorder, because if nothing else, I think that people who suffer with non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder do deserve correct diagnostic workup. They deserve to, you know, benefit from the from what's been learned about circadian rhythms over time. So we're trying to raise awareness both for those affected, but also for healthcare providers. And then second, we're hoping to encourage people who think that they are at risk for the disorder to consider enrolling in one of our clinical trials. So with that, I think I'll stop, and I'll leave it up to Gene. If there's time left, I would be happy to entertain questions.
I think we'll entertain them, and I think, Ed, will we have a microphone passed around? Or
yes.
Okay. Maybe just ask one question. Is maybe you could tell us how can people sign up to at least be considered as a subject for your clinical trial?
First of all, we do have a booth here, and we'll be manning the booth throughout the day tomorrow. At the booth, we have flyers in Braille, audio versions describing how to make contact to participate in the trial, and also describing the disorder and describing the clinical trial. There is one phone number that people can call if they're interested in participating. And by the way, I should mention, we're here in California. We have one clinical site that is already up and running in Los Angeles. Across the country, we have 10 clinical sites that are up and running, and then we have a plan to add another 15 over the next few months. Ultimately, we've targeted four areas in California as clinical sites. One would be perhaps San Diego. The San Francisco Bay Area would be one. Sacramento would be one. And then the ongoing site in Los Angeles.
Can you get the phone number and then let the people ask their questions?
I'll mention the phone number if anyone wants to copy this down. It's 1-888-389-7033. It's 1-888-389-7033. And I should say, if anyone's thinking of calling, they should call between the hours of 9 and 5 East Coast time, which is
6 and 2.
And yes. Same. I think so.
It's Vanda Pharmaceuticals. Okay.
Somebody is reminding me that is also in the program.
Okay. Vanda Pharmaceutical. Ed.
Okay, Ed, can you then, I guess, get to the mic, see who you...
Hi, doctor. Thank you. I have two anecdotes. One is I took a class from Dr. Dement of Stanford in 1970, and he cited people in the cave adapting to a four-hour sleep and then a two-hour nap. And that seemed to be what all of them accommodated to. That one. And the other one is a Swami at the temple in San Francisco says he sleeps only 2 hours a day. He says he meditates 18 hours a day. And he teaches classes 4 hours a day. And my yoga teacher, also a Swami, says she she sleeps more than that, but still less than 8 hours. What does meditation do to the sleep cycle?
That's a question. I cannot really give an informed answer to that. I would only think that there certainly are people who have kind of achieved a higher plane of kind of mind over matter that may be able to control some of these internal rhythms that at least I can't control. Although I know people have actually studied this, doing EEGs, measuring sleep in people with meditation, I'm not that familiar with that information. I'm sorry.
Okay, our next questioner.
Hello, this is Doug Martin from San Diego. Two very quick questions. First, has there been enough statistical evidence to find out whether there's any difference in the non-24-hour disorder among congenitally versus adventitiously blind individuals? And my second question is, since such a small, in order to find subjects, test subjects, you have to have a huge population to get blind people to have numbers.
Could we keep the conversations down, please?
Has there been any consideration of doing a non-24-hour sleep disorder study in the polar regions where massive amounts of the population would seemingly be affected?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question about doing it in other regions. Right now, we're early on in the program, and we're hoping that actually through our outreach efforts, through ACB, local chapters around the country, and NFB, we're hoping that we actually will be able to recruit enough people for our trials. But we've talked about extending into other parts of the world. Actually, right now, the only other study we have ongoing is in France, where there's a doctor there, Dr. Levay, who had done a lot of work on this in conjunction with the Stanford group. So we have a study in France that started up in the last month or so. And I'm sorry, I forget the first part of your question now. Yeah, originally there was some talk that there might be a difference between congenital and acquired blindness. The more people have looked at this, I think there's a belief that there is no difference, that once light perception is gone, the internal body clock takes over. So I don't think there's any difference.
Okay, next person.
Linda Castle, president of San Diego chapter. Have there been studies on people, both blind as well as sighted, that sleep, say, for instance, 18 to 24 to even 36 hours a day all the time?
Huh? All the time?
Yes, more that or less. Except for getting up, maybe go to the bathroom or eat. Other than that, no, they sleep
everyone,
a lot.
Everyone, please keep it down.
I'm not familiar with anybody that sleeps that much. That is truly...
Let me introduce you to him. Sitting right here.
Leave it to Glenda. Thanks.
And I want to
Has there been any research or study showing that people with low vision who have progressively less light, like almost none or just a little bit, is there any effect to the rhythm that way?
I think that's an area that definitely deserves much more research because it does seem as if there may be a threshold. Let me go back and just mention again that the system that's conveying the light signals to the internal body clock is almost a totally parallel system to the system of the rods and the cones that convey information from the retina back for conscious perception of light. So there is kind of a dichotomy there. There actually are people, to follow on that, there are people who have no light perception who still are able to synchronize their body clock because even though they don't perceive light, that the pathway that is going from the ganglion cells to the body clock is still working. They don't know it, but it's working and it's synchronizing their body clock. So there are variations on this theme. What the threshold is exactly, I think, needs further work.
Hi, my name is Sharon Watson, and I have a question. Do you know if there are any foods that are high in melatonin that you could possibly just eat more of those foods?
That's a good question. I have never been asked before. I don't know that, but there may be foods that are high in melatonin. Have they ever been studied to see if they will actually entrain the body clock? That I'm pretty sure has never been actually studied. The other thing to keep in mind is that in order to entrain the body clock, you really need a very kind of a tight signal to go in so that, in other words, if they were to go in at different times during the day or different concentrations were to get in from a meal one day and not the next day, you really can't, it won't work that way. It has to be kind of a synchronized time each day with kind of a finite signal that's not spread out over hours.
We're behind. I think we can take one more question and we're have to curtail.
Okay. What about individuals who may have been blind at birth and then acquired sight later on?
In those individuals, I would expect that the body clock would be synchronized again. Although I don't know of any individual cases like that myself, it seems to me like once the light perception was there, the signal would entrain the body clock.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Feeney. I would encourage everyone to go to the exhibit room and find the Vanda Pharmaceuticals table, and where you can ask more questions and see if you can find out the contact information so you can get into the clinical trials again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next speaker is Dan Sipple. Dan was elected in this year as the president of the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America. He is from Wisconsin, and before he lost his vision due to retinitis pigmentosis, he has held many types of positions, including working for his family's farm implements dealership as a truck and auto mechanic, and as a consumer fraud inspector for the state of Wisconsin. Since he lost his vision, Mr. Sipple has become a business owner with mixed facilities under the state and federal Randolph Shepherd's slots. He's here this evening to talk to us about the value of the Business Enterprises program for future generations of people with visual impairments. So let's please give Mr. Sipple a hand. Well, thank goodness he didn't get wet. I just spilled the water. Yes, it only took me about an hour to do that.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone for...
I need a sippy cup.
...to allowing me, inviting me here to speak with everyone.
Oh, God.
As mentioned, I am from Wisconsin, actually Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Eau Claire.
And if anyone can spell that, you'll get the next door prize.
E-O-U-G-O-A-R-T.
But most of them will forget the capital C on Claire. But then you tell me what Eau Claire stands for. Eau Claire stands for, it's a French word for clear water. Yes. But I spent the last 30-some years in Eau Claire. I was born and raised in central Wisconsin, a little town of Annawa, where, as mentioned, I was born and raised in a farm implement dealership. And my dad was a blacksmith by trade and later became an electric welder. I was not allowed to weld because of my retinitis pigmentosa, because they felt that the flash of the arc welder and the torch would... damage the eyes further, and I have type 13 RP, which is a slow progression, and I feel very fortunate in that respect, and that allowed me the opportunity to try other things. I worked on in the implement dealership, and then I worked on went to work a truck washer and learned became a diesel mechanic, but then a had a truck tire fell on me and crushed my back. Well, that ended my truck repair career, and I went to work on cars and became a service manager. And then the state of Wisconsin had an opening for an auto repair investigator. And I thought, oh, okay, it's just getting hard for me to bend over these cars and whatever else. And I could no longer see the timing marks on a car engine. At that time, they had timing marks that tell you how old I am. But so the state of Wisconsin said, okay, I can handle that because they want somebody with auto repair background. And since I was a service manager, I could do that. And I did that for 21 years. And each time I changed career paths, it was better than the past. As always, you know, as my eyesight and back, I felt driven me to that. But in the long run, that was the best thing that ever happened, each step. And then as my eye degenerated, where I could no longer testify in a witness stand, when you're trying to prosecute Firestone Corporation or Sears and Roebuck in a criminal court of law, and you can't read the documents, you don't have much credibility with the jury, let alone the judge. And so I had to bail out of that, because technology was not there yet for visually impaired, as my eyesight was continually degenerating. And I had been offered the Randolph Shepherd program when I was 18 years old. And I thought, no, there's other things I want to do. I didn't, you know. And then again, when I retired from the state, I said, no, I had a woodworking hobby, and I produced art quality woodwork, and I cut my own logs, sawed my own lumber, and all the way down through and finishing. And but then the third time around, they offered the Randolph Shepherd program to me, and I thought, okay, it's getting harder and harder to finish this wood project, so I better take it 3 strikes and you're out. Yeah, so I did it, and you know, it actually is the best thing that I ever done in my life. And I've been in it a little over 11 years, and I still love it. I have not worked a day in my life since I started this program, because you're not working when you enjoy what you're doing. Yeah. So my wife Sue and I, we have 3 daughters, and without this program, I don't know where they would be, but all 3 of them graduated from college, and 1 with a master's degree, consumer cum laude, top of the class. So that's just to give you a slight example of what the program means to me personally, and to my family, and to my daughters, my grandson, my granddaughter. And I'll be honest with you, with retinitis pigmentosa, you know, it's trying at times. Good friends like Gina Hanlon and Donna Seliger, that a little shorter in stature than I am. You know, I used to stand 6'3", 220 pounds. I still 220 pounds, but with retinitis pigmentosa, I tend to look over top of people, especially Donna's and Gina's, and I step on them. And they get offended at me. You know, I always tell them to sit down, but I really like standing, you know, whatever, you know. So, but that's part of the game we have, and a lot of fun we have with that. And you just learn to adjust things. And you know, the vending program, I do all my own repairs. And became involved in Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America as soon as we got into the program. And today I'm the president of the organization, which, you know, 10 years ago I would have said, no way, I'm here to learn. But I guess that even as president, I'm still here to learn. And that's why I'm here with you people, because you all have valuable experiences that I need to garner. And so that as my eyes continue to really shut down, I know what to expect. And with that, without the Randolph Shepherd program, I would not have that opportunity to be around with this great people. But the reason we're here tonight is to talk about what the future is of Randolph Shepherd. And the future is hope that everyone in the program enjoys as much as I do, and that they get as much out of it as I do, and that it will be there. And as being president, there's an organization called NCSAB, National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, which your administrators are members of. It's also called CSAVR, Council of State Agencies for Vocational Rehabilitation. And we all of us organizations formed an organization called BEA, Business Entrepreneurial Alliance. And that was formulated to protect the Randolph Shepherd Act and to improve it. And in the process, 2.5 years ago, as being part of the steering committee for BEA, Business Entrepreneurial Alliance, we started forming a white paper. And where the white paper, you know, I wasn't involved that heavily at that time, and why it's termed a white paper, artists being here, or Mitch Pomerantz in front of me may have a better idea, but it's the document is turning into be much more than I ever dreamt it would be. It was initially, I think, a lot of it had visions of it being a call to action. It is not a call to action document. It will be released Monday morning, or actually tomorrow morning it's going to be released, I guess. And for general distribution, it's fairly widely spread already, but it'll be general distribution by Monday morning. Then we'll be back down here in San Diego for the NCSAB meeting on November 9th, 10th, and 11th, and it'll be officially on record. And what it is now nothing more, actually, it is a recommendation of how this program needs to change. And this program needs to change. And if you feel that there's no need to change, you may well be part of the problem. You know, and that's you know, that's so true. That if we don't change as individuals, I've learned to accept change, and I learned to grasp it, wrap my arms or my head right around change as my eyesight diminished. And without change, you know, we would all be in one of the sleep disorders that or talked about earlier, and we don't want you know. So if we can accept change, wrap our head around it, we can help avoid that. Now, did not agree with me on that, but I think you know, stay active and be willing to change. And Sagebrush is our training conference that we have in Las Vegas every year, and that's coming up in February, first week of February, the Monday after Super Bowl. The Packers will be in it. the theme this year is change surrounds us. Maximize your potential. And that's what we're going to try to encourage people to change their lifestyles, perhaps, their business styles, whatever it takes to make this program stay alive. In the white paper, augments much of that. In some of the changes, and which I've heard alluded to earlier when Mr. Joe Xavier was talking, is that if people would grasp onto some of the issues, recommendations in the white paper, things could turn quite drastically. One issue that I like in the white paper, there's about a dozen, 15 items and recommendations in there, is a national nominee agency. And that would help employ a lot of blind people in my mind if someone would take the ball and run with it. Because there are so many opportunities for blind people that we're not grasping onto. Military dining, private industry, so on and so forth. That state agencies, SLAs, state licensed agencies, SLAs, are walking away from for fear of exposing themselves to liability. So if someone would grapple onto that, federal nominee agency, for those states that have a military dining contract or a university system or a vocational school system or a Toyota factory or a General Motors factory, and the states don't grab it because they don't want to expose themselves, and they could turn the Randolph-Shepard priority over to this federal nominee agency and they assume the responsibility and employ a lot of blind people. Just in Wisconsin alone, we're a real small state compared to California and Louisiana, Illinois, and so on and so forth, as far as blind vendors. But we could triple the amount of blind vendors we have if we would exercise our full potential, full right under the vending program. Let alone the private industry. We're going to have to start competing with the private industry. I've always felt from the very get-go that anyone can fill a vending machine, but if you want to make money, you got to do it right. And we can train blind people a lot easier than we can train sighted people. Blind people tend to want to learn. They really do. And it's a lot of fun, the working as a group, and we can stay together. And I think that if we stay together as a national organization and work together and promote some of these ideas in the white paper, this program will be along for I would not venture to say how many generations. It's been around for 60-some years already, and that's short-term in my mind. If people are willing to make the change and move, because we can do vending so much better in the private industry than Canteens de Mérida and Sodexo's. And by coming to Sagebrush, you can help us promote that factor. And in being in San Diego here, some of you are residents, if you attend some of the sessions at NCSCB 2 weeks from today, or 2 weeks, let Washington know that, we are a force. With 70% unemployment rate nationwide in blind people, it's the best employing organization for blind and visually impaired. Thank you.
If two questions, if people have questions.
I'll throw one out, Mr. Old Chair. I'm going to say something that will challenge David and Roy a little bit, but since I'm on the way out now, I can afford to say what I... That's right. But I'm one of those Oregon Ducks, of course, since we know they're going to beat USC.
I have a question.
No, I'm asking a question. There are times when I have found that, and I think in large part it's because there are so many short-term problems to attack. As individual and as a group of vendors, that there is some reluctance to try to hit the home run and go for the big changes, whether it's a nominee agency or bigger statutory changes that could really have an impact, a major impact on the program. So I understand that, but how do we, and it's got to be driven by the vendors, it can't be those of us who are trying to help the vendors, it's got to be their agenda, but how do you inculcate the idea that the vendors are going to have to take some chances and in the advocacy arena if they're going to really make an impact in the long run that's going to help make the program what it ought to be in 10 years as opposed to potentially having it slowly wither away?
That's probably the most poignant question that can be asked, is that what do we have to do? And you're right, we have to do it as a group, as blind vendors. We can't rely on the sight of the world or the Congress to do it for us. We got to tell them what we want. We got to let them know what we want. And right now, the current administration is probably the most willing to make any changes that we want at this point that we've had a chance at since the enactment of the legislation in 1943 and the revision in 1974. We're poised again now to make that. And that would be a statutory change, which is probably needed. But another avenue would be administrative change, administrative law under the U.S. Department of Education, get them to change the administrative code. I refer to them as administrative code, being formerly working with administrative codes, and get them to change on a department level. Sometimes it's easier, but with under the current administration, under Linnea Rutledge, she is more favorable to categorical services and improving them. So to get that administrative change may be a easier task than a statutory change, especially with some of your neighbors here, neighboring states, senators that aren't all in favor of Randall Shepard. But the senator can, he has been known to change his mind too. But that, again, that's what we need is people, like Roy Harmon, Hazel Harmon, Artis Bazin, that stepped up to the plate when there's a senator or congressman in town, they went to meet him and educate them on the Randall Shepard Act. It's surprising, we go to Washington a minimum once a year and meet with various representatives or staffers, and they say Randall Shepard, and they want to confuse it with NISH or Ability One. They see them all the time, they don't see us. So it's really up to us, and only us, to get the word out that the Randall Shepard program is a very worthwhile and viable program.
Thank you. Okay, the lady who was asking for the floor.
Hi, I'm Joni Pachi. I'm a vendor. I think one of the problems we have right now is the, I would say that a lot of the vendors that are here, not here, because we, the vendors, the people that are here now, we're the ones that are working hard, and we're the ones that are really wanting the program to keep going. But there's a lot of vendors that just, really a lot of vendors that just kind of slide by and don't care what happens. I mean, they just want to do their own thing. How do you, you know, first of all, we don't have enough vendors, and that's because, partly is because if someone comes up and says to me, well, are you making a lot of money? And I have to say no. And are you doing this? And who's going to join us? Where are we going to get the people that we need to fill locations that we get?
Yes. How,
we have to change the attitude of people to make them see that this, you know, I get down on my hands and knees and scrub the floors, and people see me, you know, lifting heavy cases of soda all the time, and they say, wow, she's really working hard. You know, who wants to do that for a living and make nothing? And not nothing, but, you know, very little. But the thing is, so the trainees see this. And as much as you try to encourage it, and believe me, I'm a very positive person, seriously positive. I love this program. But what happens is that people, that everybody's discouraged because first of all, the vendors, of their morale is low. And second of all, where are we going to get these people to fill locations that we don't have filled? And we got to get more locations. We need better locations, yeah. But we need qualified vendors who will go there and do that. And nobody wants to come into this program because they think it's where people are shocked. What do we do about that? How do we?
It's not an issue that's isolated just to the blind vendor community. It's an issue in small business, period. 90% of all business, small business startups fail within the first year. Another 5% fail in the second year. The blind vendor rate failure is far less, and that's probably almost reverse of that. But you're right, there are some, it's just a means to an end. I wish they, you know, would all view it as, you know, their work, their hobby, their life, their family. But that's an unreal expectation. I think if they just value the program for what it brings to their family and to the rest of their colleagues, and that's a task that I'll never see resolved, but I'll never give up trying to resolve it. That's all I can say is, people in this room, you're here because you want to learn. You know, I spent 21 years working for the state of Wisconsin as a consumer fraud investigator, and by the time was trying to encourage generally good business people to stay good and fall off the other side. So I'm not an easy one to sway by a few people that don't have the same zeal that I may have. It's a task that I just feel I'll always have, and future generation will always have that. And it's a trial and error. Some people think they get into it and they think that I can handle the work. And you're right, the physical work is daunting. And but if they, after they're into it a while, you have to coach them in for a year or so, then, you know, let them go. You let them find their own path, but help them find that path and work with them and give them that chance. That's all. It's all we really can ask, is that they have that opportunity to try it out. And most of them, like I say, we've got probably a 90-95% success rate with the people that we bring into the program, because we screen them and we have a shot at to our elected committees, people like Roy Harmon that work with the new trainees coming in.
Okay, we got one more person to be allowed to ask a question.
Marcy Knudsen. I was taking some notes, and my brain tends to get lost in all this alphabet soup. Can you just tell me, what is the NCSCB that you mentioned?
Okay. Yeah, NCSAB, National Council State Agencies for the Blind. It's a branch of the CSAVR. CSAVR is Council State Agencies for Vocational Rehabilitation. Across the country, blind services are operated, but in each state differently. And predominantly, you can categorize them two ways: they're in combined agencies or in state service blind agencies. Some states, and I'm not sure what I think California is a segregated state, that all blind services are under one department, under your health and family services. But in Wisconsin, we have what we call a combined agency, where our Randolph Shepherd Program and our blind employment services are under our general unemployment office, so to speak. And the social service aspect of blindness is held within our Health and Family Services Department. So we are a combined estate. And so that's why there's a separate organization, because some that where they have a segregated service, where all blind services are handled in one agency, they really don't fall into CSAVR, so they created NCSAB to come and bring everybody together under one roof, under one association. I don't expect you to follow me at this point, because it takes time to understand all these acronyms and the only reason I can speak quite proficiently about it is because I served my two terms under the governor's appointment to the Wisconsin Rehab Council. Every state has a rehab council, and the governor will appoint you to that. Merely if you meet him a few times and ask him, you'd be on it. And you get appreciation, you understand appreciation for other disabilities, and you don't want to really condemn other disabilities. There are other disabilities that have a lot worse than we have. I really, truly do not want to be a quadriplegic in a wheelchair. Some of my best friends at WRC were quadriplegics, and I just felt bad because I did not know properly how to help them out, how to feed them during our meetings, because we used to meet for 2 days. I learned. I made it a goal. I'm gonna help these people, because I got a far better name, because I can still work. And they were working, but not as proficient as I felt that I was working. So we've got a big advantage over a lot of disabilities. And so we need to have them as friends with us as well. And there are some fantastic people out there. And that's where the CSAVR brings them together, the state agencies. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a former bureaucrat, so I say this comfortably, that some SLAs, state licensing agencies, are pure bureaucrats. There are some excellent ones like Joe Xavier. You got an excellent one here. I've been in Illinois, Hawaii, and a few other states. There's some excellent, SLAs, but there are some there just for means to an end. They want their paycheck and their 8 hours a day, and them are the ones that we have to educate. We have to work with as a group and convince them that the program is for us and for the best of the country.
Thank you, Ms. Sippel. Can you, if people have any questions, further questions, how's the best way they can reach you?
I've always got my cell phone with me, or I got my email address, and I carry an iPad, and I got my email on my cell phone. My email address is sipple@charter.net. Tough one. But Sipple is S-I-P-P-L. No M and no E. and when I was a state employee, I always said, it's S-I-P-P-L. S-I-P as in poor, P as in poor state employee.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, we very much appreciate your presentation.
Thank you, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Our next speaker is well known to all of us, and I don't think we need to give an in-depth background on the gentleman. Our national president, Mitch Pomerantz, who's going to give us our AC report. Mitch?
Thank you, Gene. Dan, all I have to say to you is I guess I'm no longer part of the in crowd, because no one smuggled me a copy of white paper. Now, I have to dispel a rumor before it starts. In looking at the CCB program, it said Mitch Pomerantz, President, American Council of the Blind, Arlington, Virginia. Let me make it perfectly clear that Mitch Pomerantz still resides with Donna and hangs out with them little old ladies in Pasadena. I'm clearly a little disoriented this weekend. You've noticed that the hotel rooms, at least ours, it's laid out a little differently. I had a close, my upper lip had a close encounter with the top of the lampshade, thinking I was heading straight out the door. And but if I'm a little disoriented, you'll understand. I hadn't, not a thing. The problem is since the middle of September, which is about 6 weeks ago, I have been in Charleston, West Virginia at the Mountain State Convention. I was in Montreal, Quebec, visiting HumanWare. The morning, I flew back from Montreal on a Friday morning, Friday evening, and I left for a week vacation in Costa Rica. And then the week, I know. Thankfully, Costa Rica had ESPN, so I was not too out of it. And then 2 weekends ago, we were at the Missouri Convention in Jefferson City. Next weekend, I'm going to be at our national, at our fall board meeting in Reno. And the week after that, I assume that I will probably be hanging out at the bar with Mr. Sipple at the NCSAB conference back here in San Diego. I think I wrote in a column a few months ago, I love to travel, but God, do I hate to fly. Since the California Council of Blind has some very important business to conduct later this evening, and a great many of you either attended the ACB National Conference and Convention this past July or listened via ACB Radio, I'm going to keep this report fairly short, or at least fairly short for me. But I want to update you on a couple of developments since July and mention a couple of things that I'd like as many of you to take part in during 2011. If there's time, Gene, perhaps we'll have a little impromptu office hours session. And for those who don't know what office hours is, it's something that I started over 3 years ago, where we, once every couple of months, we use one of our free conference lines. Folks call in and try to stump the prez. And we get anywhere from 15 to 30 people on those calls, and they're lots of fun. We even talk ACB business much of the time. But we'll see how our time goes this evening. But let me begin with some not so good news since the convention. As you know, ACB has been actively advocating for passage of the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act, which would require the Transportation Secretary to conduct a study to establish standards for minimum sound information necessary to be conveyed to blind and visually impaired pedestrians by hybrid and electric vehicles. While our House and Senate bills had attracted significant numbers of co-sponsors, their language was ultimately incorporated into H.R. 5381 and S. 3302, the Motor Vehicle Safety Act of 2010. Those bills were introduced in late spring after disclosure of problems associated with Toyota automobiles. Unfortunately, it now appears that our efforts will be unsuccessful despite unanimous agreement within the blindness community and belated support from the automobile industry. Disagreement has arisen in Congress unrelated to the pedestrian safety language, which has probably doomed this legislation for the current session of Congress. The squabble is over money. Is anyone here truly surprised? I didn't think so. ACB will be considering our options for the upcoming session of Congress. And I say that because on a teleconference meeting that I was part of a couple of weeks ago, John Pei of the National Federation of the Blind, and remember that they are the ones who introduced the bill originally. But John Pei indicated to a number of automotive engineers and others involved in a committee that the NFB was not looking at introducing the bill next year. So we have to consider whether we will do so. Exactly 3 weeks ago, President Obama signed into law the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. And this will answer your question this morning, Mr. Martin. As a result, cell phones, on-screen television menus, and emergency notices, along with movies, will become far more accessible to blind and visually impaired people over the next several years. This tremendous victory was spearheaded by ACB's Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, Eric Bridges, and the Coalition of Organizations for Accessible Technology, COAT. Eric, the Coalition, and every ACB member who made telephone calls, sent emails, and or wrote letters to their Congress members and senators, our sincere and heartfelt thanks for this landmark success. ACB's audio description project, headed up by Joel Snyder, promotes wider use of this valuable communications medium to the public. At the end of September, we learned that ACB was unsuccessful in two grant applications to the Department of Education for ongoing funding of the ADP. The American Council of the Blind is currently considering whether we are going to appeal these unfortunate decisions. In looking at the summary of the raters, and I suspect Mr. Gray has looked at them well, it looks like we might have a fighting chance in terms of appealing one of them, at least. We are, however, currently collaborating, an organization that some of us are relatively familiar with, particularly if you're in the Bay Area, the Smith-Hillwell Institute in San Francisco, on a third grant application related to audio description. We should be finding out about the application within a few weeks. Anyone who enjoys described movies on television or live theater with audio description should cross fingers and toes. I want to remind everyone about ACB's monthly monetary support, or MMS program. MMS continues to grow, albeit more slowly than folks like me with the patience of a coffee drinker on caffeine, a lot of caffeine, would like. I am pleased to say, however, that during the conference and convention this summer, participation reached a significant milestone. Well over 200 ACB members and friends now participate in the MMS program. As I think most of you already know, you can designate up to 50% of your contribution to CCB or any ACB special interest affiliate of your choosing. If you can contribute as little as $5 per month, I ask you to please contact our Minneapolis area office and sign up. Let me also mention that at the direction of the ACB Board of Directors, we will be sending out to every member of this organization, meaning probably everyone in this room, our fall fundraising letter. We haven't done so in a couple, 3 years, and I wrote that letter personally. And what we tried to do is highlight our successes during 2010. You heard about most of those successes this summer. It's our opportunity to make personal requests of the members and ask for your assistance in keeping the work and the efforts of this wonderful organization alive. That letter should be going out on or about November 15th. That's the deadline. I'm in the ACB office, and Melanie and Lane Waters know that I stick to my deadlines. Let me also mention that if you go online, probably around December 1st, and you click to the ACB store site, you will find some changes. We have been befriended by some wonderful people out of Virginia, DQ Systems, and they agreed to update and modernize our ACB store website free of charge. The CEO of that company is a wonderful lady by the name of Preeti Kumar. And I think you'll be hearing more about DQ Systems and from Ms. Kumar and her people over the next few years. I think we're establishing a strong long-term partnership with the DQ Systems. Let me now remind everyone of two very important events which will occur in 2011. The first is ACB's legislative seminar taking place from Sunday, February 25 through Tuesday, March 1st in the Washington, D.C. area and held in conjunction with our mid-year board and president's meetings. The hotel is again the Holiday Inn National Airport, and the number to make reservations is 703-684-7200. I know that finances are very tight for this affiliate. Earlier this year, several CCB chapters dug in and sent 9-10 members to Capitol Hill to make the pitch for our legislative agenda. I believe that those Hill visits played a key role in the passage of the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. So I'm calling upon California to again send a similar delegation and to assist members financially, where feasible, to attend the legislative seminar. The second event is, of course, the 50th annual ACB National Conference and Convention, taking place from July 8 through 16, my voice cracking with emotion, July 8 through 16 in Reno, actually Sparks, Nevada, at John Asquaga's Nugget. I think we better get the casino closed during the session. You're sounding way too excited. The phone number to make reservations is 800-648-1177. 800-648-1177. The rate, by the way, is $87 per night across the board. We are already planning some very special activities to mark our 50th year as the only true grassroots consumer advocacy organization of blind and visually impaired persons in this nation. I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to stop right here and ask Mr. Lozano if we have time for a bit of Q&A.
Sure. What would you like about?
As Pat Benatar said, hit me with your best shot.
10 minutes.
All right.
10 minutes.
I have a question about the Kindle, because I know that we were working on that. ACB was working on trying to get that to be accessible.
I'm sorry, which?
The Kindle.
The Kindle, okay.
And as far as I know, it is not fully accessible. What is going on with those negotiations?
Well, what is going on is that Amazon released a more accessible version late this summer. It is not as accessible as we'd like it, but it is more accessible than it was. And they have made a commitment that the next iteration will be fully accessible. But keep in mind that the pressure that we have put on, in conjunction with the NFB and the Reading Rights Coalition, is what is leading to what will be an accessible Kindle and presumably other similar electronic reading devices, because we have a letter from the Department of Justice that says to every college and university in this country that you will not use inaccessible e-book readers. You cannot do so. It puts blind and visually impaired students, not to mention students with other disabilities, at a distinct disadvantage. And so you can only use, if you plan on using such devices in your classes, you must use accessible e-book readers. And I think that's putting the pressure on Amazon to speed up the sale, marketing and sale, of fully accessible e-book readers.
Mitch, this is David Jackson. I have a question regarding the quiet car issue. How soon, even after the work that ACB has done with these two bills, do you foresee the blind community actually reaping the benefits of a quiet car?
Yeah, that's a good question, David. I alluded to the fact that I'm sitting on a national committee. It is primarily made up of representatives from every manufacturer of automobiles in this country. Most of them are engineers, and they have got the message. They recognize that there is a problem, and they are working collaboratively on research to try to come up with a sound that will work, that will provide the kind of information we want. I'm saying that because even if the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act isn't introduced next year, I believe that we have a pretty good likelihood of seeing hybrid and electric vehicles providing some sort of usable minimum sound within 3 to 5 years, because we have gotten the mule's attention, and they're now listening to us. So I'm not necessarily Pollyanna here. I think one of the problems, for example, they've run across is they're trying to duplicate as closely as possible an engine sound. And they are having trouble, and Doug, you'll understand this, you are an acoustical engineer, they're having trouble figuring out how to duplicate that sound. And maybe you need to give them some of your expertise, but they're dealing with some of those issues. But I think within 3 to 5 years, whether we have legislation or not.
Do you think that the engineers also understand that sound can't not be turned off?
Absolutely. They understand that. I don't think that's so much an issue that the engineers are arguing. I think that's more those wonderful people in the pinstripe suits who market and sell these products. I think that they're concerned that the consumer is going to object. Well, the consumer will probably just have to get over it. All right, folks. Thanks, all of you, and take care, and we'll be around a Sunday if you last-minute questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mitch. Now we're going to have our report from our outgoing president of CCB, Jeff Tom. Let's give him a big hand.
Thank you, Gene. Hope you're enjoying this great convention. Nice to be down here in San Diego. Didn't we have some wonderful speakers so far? I think it's been excellent. Yeah. Wonderful job, as usual. Well, it's hard to know where to begin. Obviously, this will be the last time I come before you to give a presidential report. And it's probably a toss-up as to whether you or I are happier about this fact. But I do have a lot to cover, so I think I'm going to get to it. One great thing about this organization is that we never rest on our laurels. There are always new challenges for CCB in order to provide equal opportunities for those who are blind or who have low vision. And we always seem to rise to the occasion. Before I go into some examples of what we are doing, let me say that one of those very examples is what Mitch asked our chapters to do again with respect to the legislative seminar. I want to echo his sentiment that I hope chapters are able to do something to help in this time of very limited fiscal resources at the state level. It was one of the most difficult votes your board members had to do last year to not send individuals to the legislative seminar, and it is really a tragedy that we have been unable to do so, and I hope that at some point in time our fiscal status changes so that we don't have to do that very, very saddening thing. So hopefully some chapters can help us out in that regard. And I do agree with Mitch that some of those visits really did help. I know I had several letters myself based on the visits that I was able to make. Let me just give you some of examples of what we're doing in CCB right now and what we will be doing. One of Governor Schwarzenegger's initiatives, which will certainly be continued now who is elected as our new governor, I think, is to eventually turn our K-12 system into a paperless environment. I'm not here to debate the wisdom of such an approach, but suffice it to say that it is a cost-effective way of providing education in a time of limited resources. The goal of achieving a paperless system, if it is achieved, will certainly not be achieved overnight. But there is no question that the provision of information through digital means will dramatically increase. We are going to be asking you to put a resolution on ensuring that this digital environment doesn't occur at the expense of our blind and low vision students, so that they will have equal access to that environment. Frank has already begun laying the groundwork. Frank Welty, I should say, our advocacy, governmental affairs and advocacy director, has already begun laying the groundwork on this issue. And with your help, we will make sure that our students do not lose time in their efforts to have an equal education throughout the K-12 years. We engage in lawsuits only as a last resort, but when we have a party that just doesn't want to negotiate, or aren't shy about taking this step. Such is the case with JetBlue Airways. They have shown an willingness to act on making their website accessible, and we intend to make sure that they do. With our attorneys, Linda Dardarian, Laney Feingold, we are going to make sure that JetBlue Airways does their best to make their website accessible. However, this case also involves a very cutting-edge issue, an issue that was brought up today by Ms. Worden in her discussion of new rulemaking by the Department of Justice, that of making their kiosks accessible as well. Just as California was on the cutting edge of making sure that ATMs became accessible, we want to lead the way in making sure you can get your boarding pass just as easily as anyone else. We're also part of a lawsuit against the federal government to ensure that the Golden Gate recreational area is made accessible. And as Gene has asked you today in the afternoon session, we encourage you to provide any input that you can on all those areas, many of which are in San Francisco and some of which are in Marin County. If you have input on those areas, having been there, please get that to Dean or to the office. It's important to know. He gets the fun of being deposed in that lawsuit. And there are some fun things in life, and that's got to be right up there among the most fun.
I'm just looking forward to it.
Oh yes, it's kind of like those old ones where they took the tooth out by, they opened the door and they pulled it right out of there. Finally, we've entered into structured negotiations with the Cinemark theater chain to provide audio description in their theaters in Northern California, and hopefully, if these negotiations proceed in the manner that we would like, even to other areas of the state as well. We're sort of in the early stages in these negotiations, but we think there's an excellent chance, based on the recent Ninth Circuit case out of Arizona that held that audio description was indeed required under the ADA. And here again, that is another area that is now being addressed in new regulations by the Department of Justice. We just seem to be a little bit ahead of the Department of Justice, and we're proud of that in some ways. But we're also proud that the Department of Justice is beginning to see some of the real issues that we do face. These are just a few of the areas in which CCB continues to take the lead in our advocacy efforts. And you will certainly hear more from our outstanding Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, Frank Welty, during his report. Let me briefly turn to some internal matters. Let's hear it for Linda Zamolke and our new Coachella Valley chapter. They're going to be voting for the first time in a very few minutes, and that's great to hear. It's great to know we have a strong presence in the Palm Springs area, and along with our High Desert chapter, we can now make even more inroads on ensuring that the blind, visually impaired population of the desert have a true voice. On the whole, our membership is up slightly. We are almost certain, I think, to reach the 1,400 mark this year, which, given the fact that only maybe 5 years ago, we were under 1,300, is a real advance. And I think we should be proud of that. But I wouldn't be too proud of that, because it's a drop bucket of where we should be. So again, let's not rest on our laurels. Let's make it such that when the next president gives his or her report in a couple of years, we're at the 1,500 mark or more, because we have a lot of work to do. Thank you. And I think we can do it too. There are people interested in starting chapters in various parts of the state. We're hoping that we can get something going in Concord. Talked today to a couple of ladies that would like to get something moving along in the Midwest, and I plan to see if I can work with them next year in proceeding with those efforts. So I think we can do it. We can. And we must also make sure, of course, that we retain the members that we have and we keep them active and working. Before I make some concluding remarks, let me talk to you briefly about our web presence and fundraising. First, I want to acknowledge the incredible volunteer efforts of Joel Isaacs as our former webmaster. Joel has now moved to New York, but I know in his heart he'll always be a CCB member. Joel worked tirelessly on our behalf, and he filled a void that we could not have done without. So I'm incredibly optimistic of a new technical operations group who are not only undertaking what Joel used to do, but trying to expand on his work. I'm going to name all that group, hopefully sometime during the convention. Donna Pomeranz can give you all their names, but we have people from all over the state working that group. I've talked to some of them. They are very, very stoked about the work that they're doing, the camaraderie among that group, and I think that you will find that when your president reports to you a year from now, you will hear about more and more accomplishments of that group and a better web presence, a better social networking presence. I think all around this bodes very, very well for our organization. In this regard, I'd also like to acknowledge the efforts of staff member Lillian Bray and others in getting a $5,000 Kelly Foundation grant to help in our efforts. Okay. As to fundraising, just a couple of points. We've tried to come up with programs like the store card effort and Lily explained to those of you who were in the president's dinner that was briefly brought up by the board last night. We also have the state and local employee campaigns that you or your friends or your enemies or whoever can donate to. But these efforts won't work without you. You don't have to give the money, but you, in the cart program, nobody has to give any money. You just have to go to the store, or your friends have to go to the store, or your mother-in-law or whoever has to go to the store and buy groceries. And we get 3%. These efforts, if these efforts brought us $10,000 this year put together, some of these little things, it would be a tremendous, tremendous improvement, and it would help us to fill a little bit of a budget hole. And we have some big budget holes to fill. So let's really, you know, come to the understanding that fundraising is going to begin with you. We don't want to ask you to turn over your life savings to us. We do too much of that as it is. But we do ask you and to commit to the efforts that you can undertake so that others will donate and so that you can donate without giving any money with what's in the store program. But we need your help to raise money for this organization. It's also, I think, up to the board to be more proactive. Last night, I'm somewhat saddened to say we voted down a fundraising effort that I think could have helped us. We have to be more proactive. We may have to take chances. I would say to you that we are slowly losing the battle in our physical wars. We are attempting to keep costs down, but on the other hand, we don't want to dramatically diminish the services that this organization provides. So we're going to have to be more proactive in our fundraising. Is that an easy thing to do? No, it is not. Fundraising is probably the worst part of being a leader or a member in this organization, but it's an absolute essential, and it's up to each and every one of us to do what we can to bring in the vital resources that this organization needs. If you don't know what you can do, call me, call the office, call other leaders in this organization, talk to your chapter presidents. Okay, so now I come to the end. What a humbling experience it has been, serving as your president. It's humbling for so many reasons. First, because of the trust you've given me. Second, because of all that I wished I had been able to accomplish for you, and for one reason or another, sometimes I just wasn't able to. And finally, because of all the wonderful people I've worked with and friends I've made over the last 8 years. Thank you, all of you. But thank you to staff, not only those who are here, but those who have departed, like Marilyn and Diana, Marilyn Kohler and Diana Sandel. To Dan Kaiser, who I imagine is listening out there somewhere in ACB Radio Land, for all his fine work. What a ride we had. Sometimes we disagreed, but we got it done. To Frank Welty, you're doing fine work, Frank. And Frank is always willing to learn and improve, and that's the mark of a real, real savvy person. To Lily McRae, who has added so much to our staff. Incredibly competent, incredibly intelligent, and always has a wonderful smile that really is, even no matter how difficult I can be. And of course to Ed Branch, who's had to put up with me for the last 8 years. I want to express my thanks to Linda Dardarian and Lainey Feingold. It is really wonderful to work with them. We didn't agree 100% of the time, but maybe because they're attorneys, we agreed most of the time. Thank you to all the officers and directors I've worked with over the years. I don't want to single out anybody, but I've just had the pleasure of working with so many fine, fine people that have worked so hard and that are trying to do their best to make this organization the best it can be. And especially thank you to Kathy Skivers, who I know is listening out there, who I assume is. Kathy, I know there are more than a few things with which you and I strongly disagree. And believe me, during the next couple of years, I'm going to tell you even more that I strongly disagree. But I also know that you were always there for me when I needed advice. And that counted for more than you'll know. Thank you to the chapter presidents and leaders for all your work and understanding. And most of all, thank you to each and every one of you. Whether those of you who are in attendance and those of you who are not, for being part of this great CCB family and for letting me visit many of your wonderful actors. Thank you for just being who you are. However, it's not what happened during my tenure that's really important. It's what will happen during the years to come. I'm not going anywhere because I'll be doing everything I can to make the next president of CCB the most successful ever. And not because of who he or she may be, but because the blind and low vision population of California are, whether they know it or not, depending upon us to make their future road an easier one to travel. For 76 years, we've worked miracles. And nothing except ourselves can stop us from continuing to weave the magic that is the work of the California Council of the Blind. Thank you very much.
Jeff, on behalf of the organization and the board of directors, we wish to thank you for the 8 years you have given to us and your guidance and the commitment you've made. Your whole life has been wrapped around the last 8 years, and I hope you will enjoy the change and will be actively involved and being as vocal as you promised to be.
Oh, you thought you were getting guidance before. Now you're really going to get it. So now that I am retiring from the state as well, boy, you have everything to fear.
Of course, the next president, whoever that is, now tap you for a lot of things since you're going to have all this free time in your hands. So, okay. Believe it or not, we actually have concluded the general session before 10 o'clock.
I think we're going to have elections.
Okay, you can come toward me. I got a mic there.
Oh, okay. Where is it? Whoops, there we go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mitch Pomerantz, and I was very remiss earlier this evening when we were calling for folks who had been members of the CCB family who had passed away. You're going to have been around in CCB when I was president and for some time before that. But I want to let folks know that about a month ago, we lost Barbara Parker.
Oh, I forgot that too.
Barbara had gone in for what they thought was routine surgery, and sometime during the night after the surgery, she had a heart attack and died. I spoke to Harry a couple of days ago. They were in Las Vegas. Barbara has been laid to rest in Los Angeles, actually at the same cemetery where my mother is. But for those of you who knew Barbara, and yeah, she was a little rough around the edges sometimes, but she was a damn hard worker, and she loved this organization. So keep some good thoughts and prayers for Barbara and particularly for Harry and their daughter, Liz. Thanks.
Thank you, Mitch, for bringing that. That was a very tragic loss, and I'm sorry, I forgot too to mention that. Okay, well, are you done?
I am done.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
The floor is now mine, and we're opening it up for elections. So anyway, we are going to now open nominations for president. So, the nominee of the nominating committee is Donna Pomerantz. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And a final time, are there any other nominations? There is a motion that nominations be closed and Ms. Pomerantz be elected by acclamation. Let us hear from the president-elect.
Wow. Well, I want to thank each and every one of you. I did, Ms. Meth. I just want to thank each and every one of you. I hope that you know that my phone is always open and my email is always open. And as Jeff said, we have a lot of work to continue to do together, and it will be done together because this organization belongs to each and every one of us, and I hope that together we can all move into the future, into all the things we need to do, and I thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. She doesn't know what she's getting into. Okay. Now, the office of first vice president, according to my sheet, and the nominee is Eugene Lozano Jr. So, are there any other nominations for first vice president? Are there any other nominations for first vice president? Any final time, are there any other nominations for first vice president? There's a motion that nominations be closed and that he be elected by acclamation. And so it is. Gene.
I also want to thank everyone for the trust and allowing me the opportunity, the privilege of being your first vice president for the next 2 years, and also that I can continue being support to the president and to the rest of the board. And I'm looking forward to seeing the advancement that we always will progress as we have new leaders. And I think it's fantastic that we actually, in a sense, have another brand new leader, younger thoughts, abilities, ever, and it's a long evening. But again, thank you very much. I really honor this opportunity.
Thank you, Gene. Shall we say a hello out there to everybody in ACB Radio Land? Some say yes, some say no. I don't know. Some say hello. Okay. I want to give a shout out before we go on to our next office election, to an outgoing board member and the streamer for ACB Radio, Mr. Ken Metz. Let's hear it for Ken. Thank you for all your work in this effort, too.
Thanks. I've really had a great time doing this. We'll try and get it right one of these years, but we've gotten out. I've gotten calls from Larry Turnbull, and when he calls and says it sounds good, I can't ask for any better than that. And also Dan Kaiser, I think while he was out on his last day of walking his new dog before he graduates, he was probably cheating and listening while he was walking. He figured after, you know, the last day they weren't going to kick him out. And we've had a couple of other calls. You probably heard my phone ringing, and I leave it on because I never know if someone's going to call and say, you're not coming through. But we are, folks. So thanks to all of you for this privilege, and happy ACB World.
All right. Okay, so now, since the second vice president chose to flip up into the office of president, we now have to elect a new second vice president.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would like to nominate Roger Peterson for second vice chair.
Okay, I actually hadn't opened nominations yet, but I will, because it's you, Donna, I will allow that. nominations are now open, and Roger Peterson has been nominated.
You want me to take mics up?
No, not yet. Eventually we'll do that. Okay, I heard another proposed nomination. Yes, who's won the floor?
Charles, okay.
Charles, just give us the nomination. You can talk later. Thank you. Okay. Vince Calderon's name has been nominated. Okay. Next. Any more nominations? Okay. Are there further nominations? Are there further nominations? And one last time, are there further nominations? There's a motion that will be closed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. So we have two candidates.
And everyone needs their badges.
We have two candidates, and they are Mr. Calderon and Mr. Peterson. We are going to be passing out ballots, and if you choose to vote for Mr. Calderon, we'll do it alphabetically, you will not tear your ballot and leave it pure. If, on the other hand, you choose to vote for Mr. Peterson, you will tear off one corner of your ballot. So, pure for Calderon and one corner. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say the word, the opposite of pure. One corner for Peterson. Okay, Mr. Calderon, hello. Mr. Calderon, who's going to speak for you?
I'm going to have Mr. Luis Herrera speak for me.
Okay, and you only want one person?
That's it.
Okay, there will be up to 5 minutes. And now, Mr. Peterson, who are you going to have as your speakers?
Chair of the Seniors and Vision Loss Committee, Bonnie Ray. And the president of my home chapter.
Okay, so you will split 5 minutes. So first we will have Vince's spokesperson. And somebody going time. Okay, we've got a timer up here. I think what we should have voted first and then had the speeches. Okay. Go ahead.
Good evening, folks. It is my pleasure and my honor to speak on behalf of a gentleman that I've known for many, many years. I've had the privilege of having arguments with him. I've had the privilege of having agreements with him. But in all cases, when it comes to the organization, this is a person whose integrity is intact, who is very, very much in support of what this organization stands for. This is an individual who will tell you something wrong. He's not gonna sit there and be wishy-washy about a situation. His decisions are based on what is gonna be benefiting the organization. Vince and I have disagreed on a lot of things, but one thing we've always had in common is what's best for the organization is what's best for everybody, for us. So to have him as second vice president, it's good. It's a great start to a new administration.
Yes.
A woman president, but it's okay. Actually, congratulations, Donna. I'm very proud of you. I've known Donna for many, many years. And I think Donna, Eugene, and Vincent will make a great, great administrating team. This organization, like every other organization out there, suffers from the economic effects. But having a positive team, having people that are looking out for the interests of the organization is what we need. We need a solid team. We need people that are open, honest, and want to do what's right to do this. I would urge you to vote for Vince Calderon for second vice president. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Louis.
Thanks, Louis.
And we'll now have Bonnie Rennie to begin the 5 minutes for Mr. Peterson.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to speak on behalf of Roger Peterson. Roger is one of those people, there are probably not many people in this room who do not know Roger, and we could go on list his many accomplishments in ACB, CCB, on the local level, everywhere. For the few of you that don't know, and I'm only going to mention some of them, because, you know, after all, we don't have all night to list them, do we? He has been, as many of you know, not only president of his local chapter, in a newsletter, which a totally blind guy doing newsletters for a long time gives me hope, and I think that's an important skill to have. He, as we all know, has been very involved through the years in resolutions, currently constitution and bylaws. He has served in a lot of capacities within CCB, and most of you could probably list more than them even than I can. I do want to mention some other things, though, and this has gone on for many years, that he's shown his loyalty and hardworking spirit towards CCB. In addition to his current CCB duties, he's also involved in a lot of really worthy community activities, and I'm not going to even list all of them. Roger has a pretty active schedule with all of this. He is on something that's warm and dear to my heart, on the Seniors in Mountain View, and a second disability commission locally,
Plus, he's on the board of the Independent Living Center. And as important as CCB is and as involved as he continues to be in CCB, and we all really value that, it's important not to overlook the importance of being involved in the community. Not only is he working with people in these capacities, he's educating them about visual impairment.
You only have 30 seconds left.
Great.
For your other speaker.
Oh, sorry. Please vote for Roger. You won't be sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm incorrect.
Okay.
I'm incorrect.
What I wanted to add then is we all know, if you've worked with him, how hardworking he is. A lot of people we could say that about. It's true. Roger is very deliberative. He listens a great deal. He ponders. He thinks, as well as works very hard. So he's sort of like in the old days, the B.F. Hutton. When Roger speaks, we tend to listen. I think in these days of fiscal difficulties and all the decisions we have to make, it's well to have someone who's currently very involved, has a long history of doing things, and really thinks things over and is not easily swayed by public opinion. And you wouldn't want to be in a duel with Roger over quick-wittedness. I think he'd probably beat most of us. And that's not a bad thing to have in this day and age either. Thank you.
Okay. So, Mike, you have 2 minutes left.
All right. Thank you. Let's see, how can I avoid this fuck?
We won't start until you get set up.
Roger, as you know, has been with SVCB since its founding days in 1987. And in my presidency of the organization, he's been a great mentor to me. He's tolerated me and crazy things that I do, and still is around helping, advising, and you can count on him to give you an opinion that sometimes makes sense and sometimes not. But it's a thoughtful opinion, and I like it. And I think that he would be a great vice president here. Thank you very much.
Okay, so now, if you want to vote, you need to have that badge, so make it visible to the volunteers or you ain't getting a ballot. Okay, we'll get the ballots handed out and then we'll begin the standing vote. We don't have that many door prizes left, so you're not getting one. It's a good thing I'm not running for anything, I know. They give you an ovation and then they're ready to shoot you. It's a fickle family we have here. So I am reading Rob's report of the nominating committee, and one of the board nominees is named, please correct any misspellings of names, Rob. So, I don't know that candidate, but if we find him or her... All right, we're going to begin the roll call vote. Okay. We will use a mic. We will just stand up. You will yell out your vote, and if that works, then I will repeat the vote. So that's the way we are for now. ACB Capital Chapter, Deborah Thompson, and the votes are 10. Oh, I'm sorry. Joni is the delegate. Yes, that's right. Ten votes, Peterson. Okay. And Active Blind Inland Valley, the delegate is Alan Ramos. 5 votes. 5 votes, Calderon. Alameda County Chapter, the delegate is Daryl Wilkerson. 5 votes. Five votes, Roger Peterson. When you're voting like that, would you please say five votes or whatever so we don't have any uncertainty? Okay, thank you. I knew what you meant. Okay, Bayview chapter. The delegate is Steve Fort and 11 votes.
Bayview chapter cast 11 votes for Roger Peterson.
11 votes, Peterson. And if I get
ahead of you. You're okay.
Association for Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes, Teddy Joy Remhild.
AMC cast 5 votes for Vince Calderon.
5 votes, Calderon. Blind Students of California, Lena Bandy is the delegate, 5 votes.
5 votes, Calderon.
5 votes, Calderon. Braille Revival League of California, the delegate is Marlene O'Neill, 5 votes. Five votes, Peterson. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, the delegate is Donna Sanchez, and 5 votes.
Five votes,
Peterson. California Library Users of America, 5 votes. And the delegate is Jerry Arakawa. 3 votes, Peterson. 2 votes, Calderon. Central Coast Low Vision Council, the delegate is Thomas Athanasian. And 5 votes.
5 votes for Calderon.
5 votes, Calderon. The Coachella Valley chapter, 5 votes. The delegate is Linda Samolsky. 5 votes, Calderon. Compton chapter, 10 votes. The delegate is Michael Williams. 5 votes, Peterson. 5 votes, Calderon. East Los Angeles chapter, 8 votes, Charles Navarrete.
8 votes, Calderon.
8 votes, Calderon. Glendale Burbank chapter, 8 votes. The delegate is Keith Johnson.
You would have to ask.
I would.
Okay. 8 votes, Peterson.
8 votes, Peterson. Okay, Golden Gate chapter, 6 votes, Marvelina Gray. 6 votes, Peterson. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, 5 votes, John Ross.
5 votes, Calderon.
5 votes, Calderon. Greater Long Beach chapter, 5 votes, Lillian Scafey. 5 votes, Roger Peterson. Greater Los Angeles chapter, 5 votes, Ken Metz.
Greater Los Angeles chapter votes 3 for Peterson, 2 Calderon.
3 for Peterson, 2 for Calderon. Greater San Joaquin Valley chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Flowers.
5 votes for Peterson.
5 votes, Peterson. Guide Dog Users of California, 5 votes, Ann Kaiser.
3 votes, Peterson, 2 Calderon.
3 for Peterson, 2 Calderon. High Desert Chapter.
4 votes.
Wait a minute, hold a minute. 6 votes, the delegate is Leah Gissendanner. Is that correct?
Gissendanner,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
4 votes for Peterson, and 2 for Calderon.
2 for Calderon. Inland Empire chapter, the delegate is Bessie Dunn, and you have 5 votes.
5
for
Calderon.
5, Calderon. Orange County chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Kessler.
5 votes, Peterson.
5 votes, Peterson. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni, 5 votes, Albert Contreras.
5 votes, Calderon.
5 votes, Randolph Shepherd, Vendors of California, 5 votes. Roy Harmon.
5 votes for Peterson.
5 votes, Peterson. Redwood Empire Council, 10 votes. Larry Hall.
5 votes, Randolph Peterson,
5 votes, Peterson, 5 votes, Calderon. There's a big giant fan, Larry is. San Bernardino chapter, 9 votes, Theodore Wilbrecht.
San Bernardino chapter cast, 9 votes, Roger Peterson.
9 votes, Peterson. San Diego Braille Club, 6 votes, Jacqueline Jackson. 6 votes, Peterson. San Diego chapter, 6 votes, Doug Martin.
San Diego chapter cast 1 vote, Peterson, 5 votes, Calderon.
1 Peterson, 5 Calderon. San Francisco chapter, Linda Perel, 7 votes.
San Francisco cast 5 votes for Roger Peterson and 2 for Vincent Calderon.
5 votes for Peterson, 2 votes, Calderon. San Gabriel Valley chapter, 9 votes, Phil Obregon. Sir, 9 votes, Calderon. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, 15 votes, Lorraine Brown.
Silicon Valley chapter, 15 votes.
16. It says 15 here.
Well, I just came in.
Too bad. 15 votes. Yosemite Gateway chapter. 7 votes. Margaret Buckman Garcia.
Yosemite Gateway, 4 votes for Peterson, 3 votes for Calderon.
4 for Peterson, 3 for Calderon. And that ends the ballot. So we will await with drum roll and bated breath the result. Okay, we have the tally. 133 for Vincent Calderon, 204 for Roger Peterson. Mr. Peterson is the winner.
So, I thank you guys very much. I really appreciate the confidence that you've shown in me, and this microphone's doing weird things. And I'm humbled, and I hope that you won't be disappointed in me. I'm available by phone, by email, whatever. And one thing that I want to say is that this was one of those elections, you know, where there's good in both ways it could have come out, and I'm really glad that my friend Vince Calderon is still going to be on the board with me. Thank you very much.
Okay. We have, I'm going to give the names, we're going to do them. This is the order in which I got them. 4 directors. Oh, sorry, we almost forgot. We do have to elect a treasurer. So.
Next year.
Yes. Say what?
Next year.
No. No, this year. Okay. The nominee for treasurer is Chris Gray. Do we have any other nominations?
Yes.
Do we? Yes.
This is Steve Hort, and I, with pleasure, place the name Peter Pardini for nomination.
Peter Pardini's name placed nominations. Do we have any other? Hold on. Let's hold the applause here. Okay. Do we have any other nominations? Do we have any other nominations? Any final time? Do we have any other nominations? It has been moved the nominations be closed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. And it has been so ordered. So, the two candidates... Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you told me that because I was going to get those ballots right out immediately. But Roger, help through it. Okay, Chris, who are your speakers going to be?
Thank you, Mr. President. My speakers tonight will be the secretary of the Golden Gate Council, a young person in this organization, Lisa Gordon, and another person well known to CCB from Southern California, Burbank, Mr. Rick Plath.
Okay, and Peter, who will your speakers be?
Linda Perrell and Ken Metz.
Okay, Linda Perrell and Ken Metz. Okay, we're ready with the watch there?
Pam Metz.
Pam Metz, okay. Sorry, it's a long way from where Peter is to where I am. All right, so I'm going to go right past that. That's right. So, are we ready with the stopwatch?
Yes.
We're ready.
Okay, Peter, your speakers may begin. No, I'm sorry, Chris. As the nominee, it's got to be Chris's first. Lisa, sorry about that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with honor that I speak in support of Chris Gray for re-election to the Office of Treasurer. I've known Chris for the last 10 years, and during this decade I have found him to be a man of generosity, openness, humor, and compassion. In many ways, Chris has been my mentor in this organization. He's a quantitative left-brain thinker who lives and breathes the numbers that a treasurer needs to do his or her job. Chris can take the numbers for what they are and communicate them with candor to the board and CCB membership, even in tough economic times when truth is not necessarily popular. Chris is comfortable showing fiscal restraint to protect the organization in the long term, even when it does not win him friends in the short term. As a former president of the ACB and a current small business owner, Chris brings valuable managerial experience and actions that have helped to make this organization what it is today. As someone with a master's degree in public administration, Chris has the intellectual acumen to get the job done thoroughly, correctly, and in a timely manner. So if you want a man who will do the math, tell the math straight, and write the story that the math tells in the form of a budget, which usually eventually has a happy ending, please join me in re-electing my friend Chris Gray as treasurer of the California Council of the Blind. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And let's see, how much time do we have left? Okay, you still have 3 minutes and 30 seconds, Rick.
Thank you and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's certainly a pleasure to echo not only echo the remarks of the young lady that spoke previous to me, but I've got to admit this. I'm kind of winging this. You know, I just found out that he did get a master's in public administration, and so did I. The only thing is he got his from Washington, and I got mine from USC. But nevertheless, a degree is a degree. I have to echo her remarks. Took some of the wind out of my sails, but what I was about to say is what I would add. To be a treasurer, being a business owner certainly is an incredible plus when it comes to being a treasurer as well, because if you could run a business, you certainly can help to do the finances with regard to the organization. A couple other points I wanted to make is you can't find anybody more loyal than Chris Gray. He certainly has integrity. He's a stand-up type of person. He's honest. As she says, sometimes making the decisions that he feels are right, they may not be popular in the short term, but in the long term, whatever he does really makes a difference in a positive direction. And I certainly would urge you to continue to support him in the role of treasurer. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And now, Peter, speakers, you may begin.
Who are the speakers? Could you raise your hand?
Hello, everyone. This is Pam Metz, and I'm speaking for Peter. This is going to be fun. I have never done this before, so bear with me. I think I have watched Peter for the last 6 years I've been involved with CCB, and he has worked hard, especially in exhibit, and I've watched him as the treasurer, and I've sat through some of his treasurer's report when he was treasurer, and I think he's done a great job for the organization. He's put a lot of time and energy into the CCB, and he's devoted a lot of time to exhibits, and you know, that's not an easy job to do. And I just think that he would make a very good treasurer for CCB. I almost said a bad word on the mic. I just think he'd be very good at his job. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Linda Perrell.
Who?
Linda, you have 4 minutes. And I expect you to use every second of it.
Oh, you bet. Good evening, everyone. It's my great honor to discuss my friend and fellow San Francisco chapter member, Peter Pardini. We're having elections tonight, and in a few days there are going to be state elections, and you're hearing a lot in the state elections about career politicians. Well, I'm going to talk to you about somebody who really does live and breathe math. Peter is a career accountant. He's worked for the city of San Francisco for over 20 years, maybe over 25, I'm not sure. But he's worked there a terribly long time. He knows a great deal about numbers. I count on Peter, in fact, and I think many people in this room count on him as a member of the board to ask very detailed and cogent financially oriented questions about budget. That those questions show the depth of his thinking about the issues that are involved in the budget and show his commitment to CCB. I want to talk about a little bit about Peter's devotion to CCB. He is tireless. Any activity that he takes on, be it as at the local level or the state level, he is just determined to do it and indefatigable. I learned the lesson about Peter's devotion kind of the hard way last year. I sort of appointed somebody else to do a task that Peter and some of the other members wanted to do. And I learned from the anguish in Peter's response to that, how devoted he is to CCB. I think he'll make a fabulous treasurer, and I want everyone to consider voting for Peter tonight. Thank you.
All right. We'll now proceed to the ballots. We'll hand them out, and in this case, if you want Mr. Gray, you will leave your ballot untarnished. And if you want Mr. Pardini, you will tarnish your ballot by tearing off a corner. Let's give a hand to our volunteers who are helping out with the ballots. Lily, Mary Lou, Pinky, Ed. Give a hand to all of them. Okay, the ballots have been finished. Now we are ready for the roll call. Okay. ACB Capital Chapter, 10 votes, Deborah Thompson. Oh, I'm sorry. 10, Chris Gray. Joni's never going to allow me to speak to her again. I keep dissing her. Active Blind Inland Valley Chapter. 5 votes, Alan Ramos. 5 votes, Chris Gray. Alameda County Chapter, 5 votes. Daryl Wilkerson. 5 votes, Peter Pardini. Bayview Chapter, 11 votes, Steve Fort.
Bayview Chapter casts 11 votes for Peter Pardini.
11 votes, Pardini. Association for Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes. Teddy Joy Remhill. 5 votes, Pardini. Bayview Chapter, 11 votes, Steve Fort. I'm sorry. There's two. That's what did it. There are two Bayview cards in here. I saw 11, but I figured I just had them out of order. It definitely is. It definitely is. Blind Students of California, 5 votes, Lena Bandy. Four Pardini, 1 Gray. Braille Revival League, excuse me, of California. 5 votes, Marlene O'Neill.
5 votes, Peter Pardini.
5 votes, Pardini. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes, Donna Sanchez.
5 votes, Peter Pardini.
Okay, 5 votes, Pardini. Library Users, California Library Users of America, 5 votes, Jerry Arakawa. 5 votes, Pardini. Central Coast Low Vision Council, 5 votes, Thomas Athanasian.
3 votes, Tom Gray, and 2 for Pardini.
3 Gray, 2 Pardini. Coachella Valley Chapter, 5 votes, Linda Samulski. 5 Gray. Compton Chapter, 10 votes, Michael Williams. 5 votes, Gray. 5 votes, Pardini. East Los Angeles Chapter, 8 votes, Charles Navarrete.
4 Gray, 4 Pardini.
4 Gray, 4 Pardini. Glendale Burbank Chapter, 8 votes, Keith Johnson.
Glendale Burbank Chapter votes 7 for Pardini, 1 for Gray.
1 Gray, 7 Pardini. I'll try to say the Gray first. Golden Gate Chapter, so it's Marvelina Gray. She better vote that way, right?
6 votes for our current treasurer, Chris Gray.
6 votes, Chris Gray. Greater Bakersfield Council, 5 votes, John Ross. 5 votes, Pardini. Greater Long Beach Chapter, 5 votes, Lillian Scafie.
5 votes, Peter Pardini.
5 votes, Pardini. Greater Los Angeles, 5 votes, Ken Metz.
3 Pardini, 2 Gray.
3 Pardini. No, I'm sorry, 2 Gray. Yeah, no, I know. 2 Gray, 3 Pardini. Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Flowers.
2.5 Gray, 2.5 Pardini.
Guide Dog Users of California, 5 votes, Ann Kaiser.
3 Gray, 2 Pardini.
That is 3 Gray, 2 Pardini, correct?
Yes.
Okay, 3 Gray, 2 Pardini. High Desert Chapter, 6 votes, Leah Gissendanner.
2 Gray, 4 Pardini.
Inland Empire Chapter, 5 votes, Bessie Dunn. 5 votes, Pardini. Orange County Chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Kessler.
2 Grays and...
okay. Is it 2 Gray, 3 Pardini? Okay, I just want to make sure. 2 Gray, 3 Pardini. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni, 5 votes, Albert Contreras.
5 votes, Peter Pardini.
5 votes, Pardini. Randolph Shepherd Vendors, 5 votes, Roy Harmon.
5 votes, Pardini.
5 votes, Pardini. Redwood Empire, 10 votes, Larry Hall. Does it Pardini? I thought I heard. Okay, it was hard to hear.
Do you want to repeat that?
10 votes, Pardini. San Bernardino chapter, 9 votes, Theodore Wilbrecht.
9 votes for Chris Gray.
9 votes, Gray. San Diego Braille Club, 6 votes, Jacqueline Jackson. 6 votes, Pardini. San Diego chapter, 6 votes, Doug Martin.
If you will pardon me, this is sort of a gray area, so we cast 3 votes Gray, 3 votes Pardini.
Oh, Lord. I think this is really a Gray/Pardini area since you split your votes. 3 votes Gray, 3 votes Pardini. San Francisco chapter, 7 votes, Linda Perrell.
7 votes for our native son, Peter Pardini.
7 votes for Gray. I mean, Pardini, what am I saying? What am I saying? Well, he's a San Franciscan anyway. Yeah, really? No question about that, Linda. San Gabriel Valley, 9 votes. Phil Obregon.
9 votes, Peter Pardini.
9 votes, Pardini. Silicon Valley, 15 votes, Lorraine Brown.
3 Gray, 12 Pardini.
3 Gray, 12 Pardini. And finally, Yosemite Gateway, 7 votes, Margaret Bumwin Garcia.
Yosemite Gateway, 2 Gray, 5 Pardini.
2 Gray, 5 Pardini. And thank you for getting them in that order, guys, because it makes it a lot easier when they're all coming in the same order like that. Okay, we've ended the balloting, and we will wait the tally. Fortunately, the winner doesn't have to answer the final Jeopardy question.
Okay, I have the numbers.
Okay. Okay, the final tally is 107.5 for Gray, 219.5 for Pardini. And Peter has been elected treasurer.
Thank you all very much.
Hold it, get in the mic, Peter.
We're ready.
Just speak, you turned it up, just speak.
Wow, thank you all very much. And I know I'm gonna get a lot of support from Chris, and I'm gonna do a work very hard for the organization, and I just really want to thank each and every one for your support, and you're not going to be disappointed. Again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. Okay.
Mr. President.
Yes, Chris.
Chris Gray here, your former treasurer, almost. First of all, thank you, Peter, for taking this weight off my shoulders. I've done this for 4 years. I know Peter's done it before. It's not an easy job. And I think it may have been the wise thing for CCB tonight to put Peter back in this role. It's been my unfortunate task to point out year after year to this board how much more money you're spending than we're making. Probably over $90,000 this year. To say that that's a great weight off my shoulders, I think you can understand. There's no doubt that Peter's financial acumen and experience will help the board. I hope I've done the right thing in the last 4 years. It's been my pleasure, my honor, to serve CCB. I would ask, given the things that are happening in my life right now and the things that may be happening in the future, to throw the words of a great civil rights advocate. You'll recognize in a moment, I will not seek and I will not accept any other election tonight. That doesn't mean that I don't care about CCB, but I choose to be relieved of board responsibility, and whatever the president and the board may ask me to do, I will do happily. Thank you all for your support these last 4 years. Good night.
Okay, so we, I want to, Roger, you've been sort of our pseudo-parliamentarian. Let me, that's right. Should Peter's position be last or first, in your view? Last, okay, that's what I would have done as well, but I wanted to get a ruling from a higher source, a higher authority, shall we say. Okay. All right. Then we... Yeah, that's right. We now have five director positions. So, the first one is Lena Bandy is the nominee. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And the last time, are there any other nominations? There's a motion, they be closed, she be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No, and Alina is elected by acclamation. Lena! Do you want to speak?
Yeah, they're getting our mic.
I want to say thank you for electing me to my first actual term as on the board of directors. I am honored to serve, and I love CCB and will continue to serve the organization, the student division, as long as I am able. Thank you.
Thank you. And whenever we get her back from the state of Arkansas, right?
Don't.
Yeah. Okay, Vince Calderon is the next nominee. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And a final time, are there any other nominations? There's a motion they be closed, he be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And Vince is elected by acclamation. Vince, you want to say a few words? Just a few, you never say a whole lot. Except at the bar.
I'll discuss purity at the bar with you anytime, so.
All right, Vince. Thank you.
You win some, you lose some, but I thank you all, and I will continue to work for CCB on the board, and so I guess maybe people want to hear me talk more. Some people want to hear me talk less, so, but I will still be here, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Vince. Okay. And our next nominee we have is David Hanlon. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other? David Jackson is up for nominations after David Hanlon. Are there any other nominations? And a final time, are there any other nominations? There's a motion they be closed and that David Hanlon be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye. All right.
Listen, I want to thank all of you very much. It really had been a great honor to be with CCB. Roy and I just so grateful for CCB and for Dan Kaiser and Jeff Tom. And all of you have been a great support for the vendors. And and I'll do my best to serve on the board. I'm very anxious to do as much as I can to help CCB. So thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay, and finally, the final incumbent, anyway, name is that of David Jackson. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And a final time, are there any other nominations? There's a motion that the nomination be closed. He be elected by acclamation. All those say aye. And David, you have been elected.
Thank you so much for re-electing me. I'm having such a wonderful time on the board. I have learned so much, and I want to continue working for CCB. It's been a wonderful time for me. I really do love this organization, and I do see it moving forward. Thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, open position. For our last board position of the evening, hey, I can remember a couple years ago we went till midnight, so we're really doing pretty darn good, guys. Pretty good. So, all right. So, nominations are now open for the last board position. Hold it. No. The woman in the back first, because I heard her first. Christy, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, Artis Bazin's name has been placed in nomination. Now, go ahead. Bonnie's name has been placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Hold it. Okay, Lee Morton declines. Okay, are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Okay, there's a motion that nominations be closed. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So we have Artis Bazin and Bonnie Rennie. We'll do it alphabetically. Artis, who are your speakers going to be?
Christy Crespin and Rob Turner.
Christy Crespin and Rob Turner. And Bonnie, your speakers. Okay. Kathy Schmidt Whitaker. All right. So, is the watch ready?
I have the mic.
Almost ready. Not quite yet. Yes. Bonnie, do you want two speakers? Okay. So, Bernice Kandarian will also speak for Bonnie Rennie.
Timer's ready.
Okay. Artists' speakers may begin at whenever they want.
This is Christy Crespin. I am honored to nominate Artis Bazin as board member to serve the CC. Artis is a former ACB treasurer and board member. She has been CCB secretary. She has been a primary voting advocate for Glendale Burbank chapter president and past Greater Los Angeles chapter president. She has a business, Bazin Communications. She has been advisory for the National Alliance of Blind Students, ACB and CB, membership chair, secretary of RS Vendors of America. Oh, well, RSV, sorry. she's been active in her local community, and I've witnessed her selling tickets and selling bags and I know that she will take that great energy that she has and the wonderful positivity that she has as a coach and author and direct it back to the CCB. So please vote for Artis Bazin. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And how much? 3 minutes left.
Turner.
Okay, thank you. I had the pleasure of having artists in the Glendale Burbank chapter when I was president. She also was president of the Greater Los Angeles chapter when I was living in Southern California, and it was a real pleasure to work with artists. An artist is a worker. She gets things done. You know, if we needed to get a roster brailled, she could be the one to do it. She might call me and ask me a question, a technical question or two, but we'd get the job done. She has a master's degree. She is someone who follows through with a request. I think she's been...
Let's have some order.
Yeah, see what I can say here. She's been a champion for students as long as I can remember. She's also been a champion for the vendors, and she's been a former vendor in Iowa for, I think, 20 years or so. And I just really believe that she has a heck of a lot to contribute to the organization, and like I said, she follows through, and I'd like to see her win this election. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Okay. Now, Bonnie, your speakers can begin anytime.
Heartfelt passion and commitment to CCB are qualities that Bonnie Rinne possesses. I rise to you, my fellow CCB members, as president of the Orange County
Chapter. Hold it, Kathy, for a second. Let's have some order out there. We don't need conversations.
Rise before you as president of the Orange County Chapter to ask for your vote for Bonnie Rinne as a board member. She has nearly 25 years of experience with CCB. On the local level, as a speaker and advocate within our community, as chair of the Senior Blind Committee, and the creator and writer for Senior Flight and Family Flight publication, a member of the Publications Committee, a contributor to the Blind Californian with art, and a presenter at many of the CCB conventions. She joined CCB as a student scholarship recipient and stayed with the organization because she found personal and professional growth and support from CCB members. She'd like to contribute that back to individuals in the community by working towards developing mentoring and support networks within our organization. She also would like to see the continued advocacy and structured negotiations that CCB is involved with. Also, she'd like to see continued and strengthening of collaborations and partnerships between the interest and affiliates within CCB. Bonnie has been a valued member of our Orange County chapter and a great contributor as vice president and secretary, as well as an active member within our chapter and contributor. Please join me in voting for Bonnie Rinne.
Okay, thank you. And now, how much time does she have left?
2 minutes, 50 seconds.
That's a lot. Okay, 2 minutes, 50 seconds is what she has left.
Excuse me. I'd like to talk about my experience with Bonnie as a member of the Publications Committee. Bonnie has been one of the most loyal members of the committee. She has contributed articles, as Kathy said, in almost every issue of the Blind Californian, and creative and relevant issues she's written on, and she's been doing profiles as well. the publication, Failing Sight and the Family Plight, which is, we've printed 4,000 in English and 1,000 in Spanish and 500 in Chinese, so it's been a very popular document. Whenever I need a test done, I can always call on Bonnie, and she always comes through for us. So I want to just urge you to support Bonnie for the CCB board. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. We will now begin to hand out the ballots, and we'll go alphabetical, as we've been, when there is no nominee from the... So, Bazin will be no corners torn off, and Rennie will be one corner torn off. See, I didn't get into any of this stuff about being tarnished or untarnished or whatever. And I'm going to either have my ballot with no corner or one corner. Okay, so to repeat, no corners, Bazin, one corner torn off, Rennie. Okay, we're going to begin the roll call vote. ACB Capital Chapter, 10 votes, and it's really Joni Patchy. Ten votes, Bazin. Active Blind, Inland Valley, 5 votes, Alan Ramos.
5 votes, Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Alameda County Chapter, 5 votes, Daryl Wilkerson. 5 votes, Bazin. Association Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes, Teddy Jar Remhild. Okay, that's 2 Bazin, 3 Rennie, correct, Teddy? Teddy Joy? Okay. 2 votes for Bazin, 3 for Rennie. If you can say them in that order, it really helps. Okay, Bayview Chapter, how about that? 11 votes, Steve Ford.
Bayview Chapter, 11 votes for Bonnie Rennie.
Okay, 11 votes, Rennie. Blind Students of California, Lena Bandy. 5 votes.
Blind Students of California cast 5 votes for Advisor Turner, Ernest Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Excuse me. Braille Revival League of California, Marlene O'Neill, 5 votes.
5 votes, Bonnie Rennie.
5 votes, Bonnie Rennie. I'm sorry. California Council Citizens Low Vision, 5 votes, Donna Sanchez. 5 votes, Bonnie Rennie. Library Users, California Library Users of America, 5 votes, Jerry Irakawa. 4 Bazin, 1 Rennie. Central Coast Low Vision Council, Thomas Akinishin. 5 votes. 5 votes, Bazin. Okay, Coachella Valley, 5 votes, Linda Samulski. 5 votes, Bazin, correct? Okay. 5 votes, Bazin. Compton Chapter, 10 votes, Michael Williams. 5 votes, Bazin. 5 votes, Rennie. Glendale Burbank Chapter, 8 votes, Keith Johnson.
Glendale Burbank Area Chapter, votes, 8 votes.
You had to think about that, I guess. 8 votes, Bazin. East Los Angeles Chapter. What did you say?
He skipped East LA. Just got out of order again.
Yeah. East Los Angeles Chapter. 8 votes, Charles Nabarrete.
2 votes, Bazin. 6 votes.
2 Bazin, 6 Rennie. Golden Gate Chapter, 6 votes, Marvelina Gray. And let's see, the alternate is Martin Jones. All right, so Golden Gate casts no votes. And this is Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, 5 votes, John Ross. 5 votes, Bazin. Greater Long Beach Chapter, 5 votes, Lillian Scafey.
5 votes, Rennie.
I'm sorry? Rennie? Okay, sorry, I couldn't hear. 5 votes, Rennie. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, 5 votes, Ken Metz.
Even though she's a...
Ken, don't you just vote?
Five votes, Bazin.
Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Flowers. 5 votes, Bazin. Guide Dog uses a California, 5 votes, and Kaiser. 2 Bazin, 3 Rennie. High Desert Chapter, 6 votes, Leah Gissendanner. 3, excuse me, for Bazin, 3 for Rennie. Inland Empire Chapter, Bessie Dunn, 5 votes. 5 votes, Bazin. Orange County Chapter, 5 votes, Debbie Kessler.
Orange County, 5 votes, Rennie.
5 votes, Rennie. She had to think too, both these chapters. What am I going to do with them? Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni, 5 votes, Albert Contreras.
5 votes, Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, 5 votes, Roy Harmon. 5 votes, Bazin. 5 votes, Bazin. Redwood Empire Council, 10 votes, Larry Hall.
2 votes,
okay, was that 2 Bazin, 8 Rennie?
Yeah.
Okay, 2 Bazin, 8 Rennie. San Bernardino Chapter, 9 votes, Theodore Wilbrecht.
San Bernardino Chapter cast
9
votes, Artis Bazin.
9 votes, Artis Bazin. Sandy Gabriel Club, 6 votes, Jacqueline Jackson. Wait a minute, okay, the alternate is, hang on, I just have to announce it. Joseph Lopez, correct. That is 6 votes for Rennie. Okay, 6 Rennie. San Diego Chapter, 6 votes, Doug Martin.
6 votes, Bazin.
6 votes, Bazin. San Francisco Chapter, 7 votes, Linda Perel.
I'm going to slightly modify my vote. 3.5 for Bazin, 3.5 for Rennie.
Sounded like a good Boston vote to me. 3.5. For Bazin, and 3.5 for Rennie. Did I do that justice, Linda? San Gabriel Valley Chapter, 9 votes, Phil Obregon.
9 votes for Bazin.
9 votes, Bazin. Silicon Valley Chapter, 15 votes, Lorraine Brown.
Silicon Valley, 3 Bazin, 12 Rennie.
3 Bazin, 12 Rennie. And finally, Yosemite Gateway Chapter, Margaret Buckman Garcia, 7 votes.
Yosemite Gateway votes
5
Bazin,
2
Rennie.
5 Bazin, 2 Rennie. And that concludes the balloting. Almost done, everyone. We'll just await the tally.
Bazin, 197.5, Rennie, 124.5.
124.5 for Rennie, 197.5 for Bazin. Artis Bazin is elected. Okay. You gonna get to a mic, Artis?
Thank you much, everyone, for supporting me, and I'll do my best. I always try to work as hard as I can for CCB. Thank you.
Thank you. Bonnie, you wanna say anything? Ms. Bonnie, get into a mic.
Hi, everyone. I really want to congratulate Artis. I know she'll do a good job. I'd like to congratulate Artis. I know she'll really do a good job. And thank you to everyone who supported me. I really appreciate it. It's been quite a day. This is my first time to ever write in for the board. And I just want you to know I love my committee work. I'll be around I love CCB. Let's all keep working together. Thank you.
Thank you. What two great candidates. Okay. All right. Anything else? Hearing none. We are now in recess until tomorrow at 1:30. Thank you very much for your attention.